This is PFW in progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddie, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddie in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddie and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs.
And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie. Won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. I'm like everybody says. I'm dumb. I'm smart. And I want to spend.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom's no longer consigliere. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. That's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in progress.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
All right, welcome to PFW in progress. Fred Kirsch, Andy Hart, Tom Casale. Paul will be here soon. He's getting lunch, right?
That's yes, good.
He's getting pizza. I'll always excuse tardiness if they're getting food.
Why, is he bringing you food?
He's supposed to get me a small cheese pizza.
Oh, okay.
What, you were going to leave me out?
I didn't get anything. I'm recovering from all the eating I did in Indianapolis.
You look a little flush. What's wrong with you?
I just came out of the bathroom. I'm not feeling so good.
Really? You look like you just went 10 rounds with Holyfield.
I really am starting to recover from all the eating I did in Indy.
Why'd you do so much eating?
My system's got issues, and you have to eat out. You're on the road. You got to eat out.
All right. Well, that's something we're going to talk about. Jam-packed 2 hours. PFW in progress. The email address is webradio@patriots.com.
Whoa, you got a new computer.
We got a new computer here, webradio@patriots.com. This thing is lightning fast.
Wow.
I don't have to wait anymore.
Stay off those sites so it doesn't slow down as we go along.
So webradio@patriots.com. Phone number is 508-543-7482. And as we just alluded to, Tom and Andy have just come back from Indianapolis. You just got it back in yesterday.
We barely made it on the prop plane that you sent us on.
So we have a lot to talk about. They were there firsthand. A lot of great info. They thought listening to them yesterday was like listening to two kids who just got back from Disney World.
We had a good time.
You know,
that was much better than Disney World.
Better than Disney World.
No, it's Tom's Disney World.
Yeah. So that's good. We'll have a lot to talk about, a lot of draft talk about. I see an email that's already come in about the CBA and where that stands. And we got problems, folks.
It's about to hit the fan.
And you know what? I have a Diet Pepsi. Paul's back.
You know what? I'll have a Diet Pepsi.
The problem is not, Upshaw can walk away and do all he wants. That ain't the problem. It's the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And we could get into that. You know, there's a lot of detail that we have to get into. Of the percentage of,
thank you, Robert.
What the revenues are going to be for the cap. Right now, the owners are proposing like 56.5. Upshaw wants 60.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the problem. That's not the problem. The only reason the owners are proposing 56.5 is because they themselves can't agree on how much of those revenues are going to be shared amongst themselves. If they could agree on that, 60 would not be a problem.
Right.
So We got a little bit of problem in paradise going on here.
I'd say more than a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, though, selfishly, as a Patriots fan, it's not as much a problem as it is for this team as it is for some others.
Yeah. The teams that are in trouble are the teams that are way over the cap.
Yeah.
They're going to have to cut and cut and cut.
Washington,
there could be a lot of names just floating around in the next day or two.
A couple of the teams, like Kansas City, those three teams in particular, I heard.
Tampa Bay. I heard one of those teams.
I heard Washington is in the
most. Washington is the one I hear at the top of the list every time someone rattles off names.
So, you know, they're talking about if they get the
I'm excited to be a head coach.
If they get this thing done, they're thinking that the cap will be about $110 million. That'll give teams like Washington and Jaguars a little room to keep guys that they'd otherwise have to cut. If they don't get this thing done, then the projected cap is like $92 to $95 million. Then teams are going to have to make some hard decisions. Plus, of course, next year, 2007, becomes an uncapped year, and that really kills guys in front offices trying to figure out what they're going to do with free agents and guys they're trying to sign to contracts. And, you know, even a guy like Willie McGinnis gets affected because you don't know how to restructure.
Everybody.
Adam Vinatieri gets affected.
All the players on that are heading into free agency are going to be affected, and not in a positive way. It's not a great year to be a free agent.
No.
David Givens, who, you know, we all talk about, didn't get his money because he was a seventh-round pick the first time around, may not get the kind of money he thought he was going to get again if they don't get this deal done. And it's going to hurt a lot of big-name free agents, the money. It's a whole new world out there, and no one's happy about it. It was designed to be that way, so nobody would be happy, but it hasn't forced them to get the deal done, and that's how it was supposed to work.
The big question is, who blinks first among the owners, the guys that have the money, like Robert Kraft and Snyder and Jerry Jones, or the guys that don't, like the Rooneys? And, you know, it's funny that you say Rooney because they just won the Super Bowl, but they're one of the teams saying that, you know, we can't make the same type of revenue that you guys are making, so it's unfair that the cap goes up and we don't have as much revenue. The cap's going up because of your guys' revenue. We don't have that money. And then
Bill Polian said the same thing at the Combine, that he said his team wouldn't be able to compete like they do now if they didn't have the current structure in place.
Then he went like this.
Yeah, then he slammed the desk.
He didn't look so good, I thought, either.
Meanwhile,
speaking of old guys,
he looked better than Marv Levy. Yeah, he looked better than Marv Levy.
Levy's got 1 foot in the grave.
Meanwhile, they're going to get a stadium built with public money. And
maybe. That's still not approved yet.
No, it isn't, but that's what they're trying for.
Right.
And, of course, they would keep all that money under the current structure.
See, I don't understand why it has to be. This is supposed to be the most powerful league in the world, with some of the smartest people in the world working for it, with unlimited financial resources. I don't understand why they can't figure this out. I have a big problem with this.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Hire accountants. It doesn't have to be black and white. It should be a percentage of what you can potentially earn. So in New York, you can earn a larger number than in Kansas City. So let's just say
attitude.
The Jets are earning 68% of whatever the number a bunch of accountants put on it, what your market share could be in New York.
But I'm not Bill Belichick.
Set a number and make sure every team is earning that amount.
Okay.
So the Kansas City Chiefs might be earning 68%, but it's of, you know, $100 million, let's say, instead of $1 billion in New York. As long as they're achieving their market share, I think they're doing their best to help the league.
Yeah, but now what happened? Okay, and then you think that the owners that are making more should be then willing to share what the...
That's how I think they should come up with the shared revenue. As if you're fulfilling your commitment to the league by earning your share of your market, earning your potential revenues, a certain percentage, I think that's how they should come up with the whole shared revenue system.
And so then,
I think they should go to the lowest. And that's how they should. I agree with Andy's plan to a point. I think you go to the lowest revenue generator and share. And let's just say Jacksonville, you know, achieves the least amount of local revenue. And that's, say, just, you know, $50 million. You know, I know we're talking about fictional dollars here. I have no idea what kind of local revenue teams make. Let's just say they make $50 million. It's more fair to me for Dallas and New England and Washington and all the other teams that have the money to share
to me
that amount with everybody than it would be going to the top end of the scale and having the teams have to, you know, share all of that money. And then that way, the teams that are making all the money still have a bigger profit, but at least they have to share some of that profit with the other teams, so it's still kind of a competitive level ground. Now, I don't know anything about business. That might be the most stupid suggestion that you could ever have. But
I think smart people would be able to take some sort of plan like this and make it work.
Well, I think some of it's all right, but here's the problem. What constitutes the salary cap is total football revenues.
Correct.
So you know the difference between what an average and a mean is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What the extra money that the Dallases and the New Englands are going to be earning is going to make that salary cap a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if I'm only sharing, as New England, the minimum, right, that's still – really, it's a wash. So really, the Jaguars are still in a hole having to spend – for that higher cap, but I don't have any more money than I had before because we're sharing at a minimum, and I already have that money.
No, see, I think, and I don't, I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants here talking this out, but, you know, say my faux number, you're earning 66% of your market. Everybody's earning that. If you're not earning that, you're not included in revenue sharing. if I can, if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you're putting nothing in, you're not trying to do anything, you're not earning what you could be earning, you're out.
I think there's...
Bring yourself up to the level, and then you can share in our profits.
That's a tough one, because...
And then the teams that are earning more,
say,
let's say you earn 60%, that's good.
That would be a hard one to audit, because who's to say in Arizona what their market should be?
Well, that's where you come... I mean, there's millions of consultants and firms out there that do all this accounting. They're going to be able to figure out this stuff, no? I mean, people can tell me what the market share for this is, the market share for that is.
It has to be a happy medium. I agree with Andy on this. There has to be a happy medium between... You know, the Dallases and New England's and Washington sharing all of the money that they make. And, you know, the teams that just simply, honestly, can't generate that
right.
that revenue, you know, getting something too. There has to be a happy medium between those two.
Pro Football Talk had a pretty good idea today. I don't know if you read it.
No.
What they said is, okay, all the revenue, all the local revenue now becomes part of the total football revenue. That drives up your cap. Okay, so
right.
now you've got your cap number. Then... You say, and then, but you don't have to share it. But then you say, all local revenues, new local revenues from this point on that, you know, these smaller teams start earning, you don't have to share that revenue. So the Colts
don't have to share the new stadium stuff.
So there's a certain percentage now, a level, like you said, that minimum level, that all gets shared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if the Colts now build a new stadium and have premium seating, they don't have to share that. So that you know, they're not getting any more money
right.
now, but if they earn more money in the future, they don't have to share it.
Well, how do the... So what about the teams that already make that money?
They'd have to share it.
So now how...
A percentage that they're not sharing now, they would have to share. Now.
So how does Robert Kraft feel about the Colts? You know, Irsay still there?
Yeah.
How does he feel about Irsay jumping in... You know, say 2 years from now, and
benefiting from being behind the curve
because he wasn't there at the beginning. He gets to
right.
keep it all, and Robert has to share his.
Well, because right now there would, you know, right now Irsay would be sharing a certain percentage of what he has. Okay, so let's just say for argument's sake, the Colts constitute the minimum level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever they're earning now, they are sharing,
mm-hmm.
and at that level, so are the Patriots. A little bit more, actually. But, you know, but the salary cap's going to go up, you know, according to Bill Polian, more than they can afford now in that model. So the incentive to them is, okay, maybe right now you're spending a little bit more than you can afford on players because the cap is being driven up by these hot big market teams. But from this point on, anything more you earn, you'll get to keep, and you'll make up that difference, hopefully. And it gives, you know, so the incentive still is, you know, for teams to, you know, create their revenues.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we get this labor piece.
Right. But I think my only point is here, and I don't know the numbers and the specifics, but we're seeming to hash out a reasonable plan, just four morons sitting in a radio studio. Why can't these owners get the best accountants on earth?
We don't have a financial interest in it. It's a lot harder.
I think
Jerry Jones is
like
talking about his millions.
But my point is, if you have to share, you know, you have to earn a certain percentage of your market, 60% of your market, whatever they say you should be earning in Dallas. As long as you earn that, you take part in collective in the sharing, and then whatever you go above that is yours. You keep it. So if you are earning 90% of what you could possibly earn in Dallas, you get an extra 30%.
No, I understand that. But see, now that's where the players' union comes in. They say, yeah, that stuff you're keeping, that still has to go into the salary cap, though.
Right.
So that's still driving up the salary cap to a level that the teams that aren't earning it can't afford.
But you're sharing. You're sharing with the other.
You're sharing a certain amount.
The
but
Cowboys,
above that, you're not sharing. That still makes the salary cap bigger.
Right, because you're saying that the Cowboy players don't want to play for Jerry Jones if he's making $70 extra million and it's not going back into the salary cap.
Right. Well, that's what the union is saying. Right.
The way it was put here, and this is an anonymous, a middle class team owner. You know, he wrote, and this is Ron Borges' piece in the Globe today. How are the 20 middle class teams, not to mention the low income teams, going to agree on what percentage of total gross revenues are to be used to establish a new cap when they don't know where the money is coming from? If total revenues are used to establish the cap and the local revenues aren't divided equally, we're using a much larger share of our income to pay player costs than a team like the Cowboys. How is that fair?
I think it's fair.
I think it's fair, too.
You should have bought the New York Jets instead of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, and the other thing is, too, and Fred talked about, you know, how it's kind of a tricky business auditing and looking at everybody's books. I'm not going to call anybody a liar, but just on the surface, it strikes me as rather odd that the Indianapolis Colts are claiming that where the cap is right about now is all they can afford. Because I would think, you know how we talk about how much money goes to the cap, but the overall payroll for an individual year?
Right.
With the amount of large signing bonuses the Colts have put out in the last 5 years, with Manning and Reggie Wayne just recently, and Freeney, and all these other guys, you know, Marvin Harrison, I find it awfully hard to believe they haven't been well over the cap in individual years, at least two or three out of the last 5 years.
I find it awfully hard to believe.
You know, when you talk about the actual total payroll, right. Washington is at the top of the list every year.
Right.
I find it hard to believe that this is as high as the Colts can go salary cap wise.
Well, there's some posturing on both sides. They don't want to show all your cards.
You find that hard to believe. I agree. You guys, you know, Tom and Andy, you find it hard to agree that these guys just can't sit down and figure this out. And you're right, too. The problem is it's the egos now.
Yeah.
That you got, you have these, the big market owners are just insulted that a guy like Dan Rooney can complain about this thing and in the same breath say, we're not going to raise our ticket prices, or in the same breath Mike Brown says, we're not going to sell the naming rights to our stadium because I want to name it after my dad.
And Dan Rooney's insulted that Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder come in and try to make changes to a league that he founded and built over the last X number of years.
His argument is, well, that's too bad that you had to pay more for your team. It's because of us that the value of these teams is so high, and it's because of the TV deals, which, by the way, Robert Kraft helped do, but besides that, it's because of those TV deals and the league that you were able to, you know, you had to spend that much money, but now your team is tripled, quadrupled, you know, 10 times the value that you ended up paying for it, you know, but...
See, the Paul Brown Stadium one, though, you can get around that. You can call it the RCA Dome at Paul Brown Stadium. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You
that a lot.
The name in there.
Paul That's Brown Fields.
That's ridiculous.
Of
inside of.
But you know why they don't? Because the guy is lazy.
Yeah, he
That's
is.
Why right. I have no sympathy for the Rooneys and the.
But
and
that's
guys.
Why I want to know
there's
a number.
One guy, there's one guy out there that I would have any sympathy for, and that's Lamar Hunt, because I think that he does it the right way.
Oh, yeah.
Ralph Wilson, Dan Rooney, you know, Bill Bidwell. I have no sympathy for any of those guys because they just sit on their butt. And because this is the way it's been done. Rooney actually insults me. You know, this is the way it was done. You know, you tell the story about how his father actually won the Steelers in a card game.
Right.
You know, let's see how you would do with a $300 million nut that you have to pay on the stadium if you had to do it that way.
Right.
Let's see if that would be the old school traditional way to go about building revenues.
But see, you're getting all angry.
It irritates me.
I'd like to know.
Angry.
No, I know, but I'd like to know. I have no idea what the Buffalo Bills bring in compared to what they should bring in. I look at Buffalo, and it looks like a crappy place to me, so I don't know how much money they could possibly bring in.
You know what? They shouldn't have a team then. That's what. See, we expand to these cities that can't handle teams. Jacksonville being a great example.
Well, yeah.
Green Bay is the only one who should have that.
Well, Buffalo's been around a long time. I mean, it's hard to say we'll just take the Bills away.
I know, but it would be devastating to take the Packers.
Yeah, they would.
What I'm saying, Andy, is if you truly deserve a team, you know, people say, well, you know, I love when that deserve word gets thrown out there. They, you know, so-and-so deserves a title, so-and-so deserves a team. Well, if they truly deserve a team and they can support one, there's business in Buffalo. Let's face it. It's not, you know.
But I don't know what it is. I would like somebody to give me a number, a market share, or what their market is, and tell me how much they could potentially be earning if they did all the work they could. You know, stadium naming rights in the market, or just all advertising, blah, blah, blah.
I'll give you a perfect example, Andy. This franchise would have been, if this was 10 years ago and this happened, you'd be hearing the Sullivans crying poor mouth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's changed?
Mm-hmm.
People came in and they maximized the dollars that were available.
But see,
that's all that's changed.
But that I think you can argue. Okay, in New England, you're in between Boston and Providence. There's definitely a market there that can support you.
Buffalo's a tough place.
I don't know what's in Buffalo in terms of companies and money.
That stadium is just a horrific.
I think a private firm should go around and tell me what every city they could earn.
Buffalo is a bigger city than it's given credit
for. No, it's a bigger city.
I was thinking, okay, how would – you know, I was thinking exactly like you are right now last night. I was thinking, well, what gauge could they use to say what a city should be earning? I think, well, why don't they just go by the TV market? You know, because really, it's, you know, it's not exactly the same, but it's kind of
usually, you know, where there's a lot of people, there's a lot of companies, there's a lot of everything.
It's an apples to apples thing. And, you know, if you're the fifth major market, you should be making a certain amount of money in your area. But then you get into a place like New England, where it's so weird because, you know, what is our TV market? Does it include Maine? Does it, you know, or is it just, you know, that 75-mile rule around your stadium? I, you know, there's a, no matter what you do, there's something that someone can say that say, but, you know, so in New York, but we've got two teams. It's split up. You know, so do you split up the New York market?
Yeah, well, you've got a gazillion people.
What side is Al Davis on, Fred?
What?
Is he on Jerry Jones' side, Al Davis?
I don't. That's a good question. He has not said a word.
He hasn't
about
said anything.
He's just wait. Whatever they
he's standing alone waiting to sue.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever they end up doing, he'll sue him.
He's waiting to see who sues, and he's going to be on that side.
Right. You know.
But that's the other thing we haven't talked about. If all reports are correct, and there's nine big market owners or powerful owners, they only need one person to jump ship.
John Kerryam, yeah.
And then they lose their control, and then they sue, and this, then it gets really
you
ugly.
You think
but.
That Jerry Jones has been leading this charge for the past decade? Do you think he's been building to this point? Because, I mean, I remember 10 years ago he didn't want to share his money. And do you think he's kind of gotten people in his corner now?
Oh, I think a lot of – he paved the way for a lot of owners to
I
do
remember
what they're
when
doing
he now. When he sold – I don't know if it's Coke or Pepsi, but
– right. He went against the league.
Yeah, he flat out defied the league rules, and he became a whatever, must have been a Coke stadium.
The Patriots are a big benefit of a lot of the things that Jerry Jones did. You know, at the same time that he was doing that Coke deal, the Patriots did the same thing. They got rid of Coke, and they got Pepsi. And, you know, Patriots kind of flew under the radar, and Jerry Jones took the heat for that. In fact, there was one year where he tried to make his team a Nike team, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so but a lot, you know, a lot of the owners will never give him credit for it, but he paved the way for a lot of this local revenue.
Right. But a lot of the old owners won't give him credit. I bet you Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder and those people say, yep, he's doing a fine job down in Dallas.
Right. You know, but and they don't have to. They have no debt.
Right.
You know, they are the sportsmen. They do it for the love of the game. You know, they make the money that comes to them without working, that every team gets, and they're happy with that. And that's great. But if you've got a stadium to pay off or, you know.
But again, why can't they tell me that? That's what I want to know. Everybody says, well, he's got a debt. Okay. So Robert Kraft is in a market that can support $100 million a year, but he has to pay $20 million a year on a stadium debt. I just feel like if you know what you're talking about, you should be able to figure these out in numbers.
I think it was Rooney.
Get an Excel document and figure it out.
I think it was Rooney that said something even more that, you know, showed me that he just doesn't get it. He even admitted that, okay, some teams have more debt than others. But then he added, well, I can't – it's not my fault that some teams want to pay off their debt more aggressively. In other words, you know, they don't want to take their time paying it off. Well, what's wrong with paying off your debt aggressively? I mean, as
but
long –
But see, that I don't care about.
Now, I could see a team that was charging – that wanted to do that, that was charging so much that people weren't renewing their season tickets, they weren't buying the merchandise – but, you know, you're a businessman. You see where that level is. How much can I charge and people will still fill my seats? If you're doing that, and by doing that you could pay off your debt a little bit more aggressively, well, how dare Dan Rooney?
Yeah, but you know, see, to me, all that would be in my phone number that I want. That will be included. He should know you're in a market that supports this price for tickets, so you should be selling this many tickets, blah, blah. I mean, for example, when you get a house, they go over your credit history. They have your salary, your wife's salary, the cars you own, any property. They have the debt. They put it all together, and they decide how much you can afford. Why can't they do something like that with this and say how much a city can support the team? Just
because you're not because you're not fudging your books.
Give me the credit score on the New England Patriots right now.
Well, that's, you know, I'll give you an
example. Or Tom Casale.
I mean, you don't want mine. Tom Casale. I knew that was
you would hope that, you know, they come in. Every team gets audited now by the NFL, by the way. And you would
those
hope.
Guys sit by my office, don't they? There's a little dark room in there with these people from one of those Ernst & Young or something.
Yeah, at the end of the year.
See a guy with a little green visor on.
Every team gets audited. But even with that, you can create different entities, and you can put your pro shop in that entity, and it's not part of the team.
They're all slimy. That's the bottom line. Well, they're all a little bit
slimy.
There's
too many ways to get around things.
Right.
That's the problem.
And that's the whole thing with the Yankees. They claimed zero fee for the Yes Network.
Yes.
Oh, go screw yourself. It wasn't zero.
Right, exactly. And that's what happened. And that's why I kind of stopped short. I mean, I obviously, based on what we've talked about the last couple of weeks, I obviously side with, you know, the new breed here, you know, the Krafts and the Joneses and the Snyders, because I think they've been aggressive and smart and innovative in finding out how to raise money, where the other teams, I think, are complacent. But I stopped short of, you know, really having too much sympathy for guys that are making this amount of money. You know, and the way Borges writes it today, you know, never underestimate, you know, the blinding power of greed.
Oh, I liked the last line. Read his last line.
And to a degree, he's right. This is all about everybody wants more of a very, very large pie.
Right.
Yeah, he writes, whether this dark scenario was 11th hour brinksmanship, NFLPA showmanship, or a simmering disaster is anyone's guess until tomorrow morning when 32 NFL owners will decide between common sense and chaos with just a touch of greed thrown in.
I like that line.
I think greed does have a lot to do with it, but I think if you ask these guys, and I think they would truly believe it, whether or not it's true, they believe it, principle is more. It's more that, you know, if everyone was earning the same local revenue, this wouldn't even be an issue.
Right,
you know, because Robert Kraft or Jerry Jones or Daniel Snyder wouldn't have any problem sharing it.
But it's never going to happen like that. That's the problem.
You know, but, you know, they see it, let me state that a different way. If they saw the small markets doing everything they could to maximize revenue, I don't think it would be an issue. But they know for a fact, and I don't know what those facts are, but they seem to know for a fact that there are just some teams that just don't.
And maybe that's it. Maybe they know my number. Maybe they know that the Colts are only earning 30% of their market share, and they should be at 60 like the rest or whatever.
The Arizonas and the Cincinnati.
But like you said, Kansas City, everything in that place is sold. They have this company sponsors this.
I happen to think that Lamar Hunt is a pretty innovative guy.
Right.
You know, and I think that he's been very creative over the years. He's been around a long time. I think that he is just, there's only so much he can do in a market that, you know, that size. That's why I kind of give him a free pass. And I'm sure there are others that are like him that deserve a free pass that, you know, that I'm not necessarily familiar with. I think he's been, I mean, he's a guy that was, you know, instrumental in the Super Bowl. Right. Along with Pete Rozelle. It was his idea. He coined the phrase, Super Bowl.
Right. You can't go back to the old days because these newer owners are business.
It was Lamar Hunt.
It was the ball.
They're not football fans bought the team just so they could buy a team. They shell out this money to make more money.
Right.
Well, that's the inherent difference is some of the old school owners were just kind of guys that started a football league.
Right.
These people are cutthroat businessmen who got into this as businessmen.
Right. And it was like, you know.
Not in a poker game.
Some of these other guys, it's like, you know, wait a minute. I'm going to own the team, and then we're going to sign this deal and have every game be on national television. So that means we get to pool all. Wow, what a great country.
Right.
I don't have to do a thing, and I'm going to make 1/32nd of, you know, $17.6 billion or whatever the last, you know, it's even more than that now.
I mean,
I'm going to Haiti.
Hey, what a great country.
Robert Kraft bought the team in January.
Haiti wouldn't be good.
When Kraft bought the team in January of 1994, when the deal was consummated, At the time, he spent more than anyone had ever spent for a football team. It was about $170 million. People called him crazy.
Now he has.
But he knew that it was
$1 billion.
It was workable because of the CBA that had been agreed on the year before with the salary cap and the shared TV revenues. He knew he could make it, even though he was, at the time, way overpaying for the team. And then, beyond that, I mean, who has worked harder than the Patriots to make that work? You know, so, you know, that's and the same thing goes for Daniel Snyder and not so much Jerry Jones, although Jerry Jones gets it from a local marketing. But these guys that have come in have spent tons and tons of money to get these franchises. And by the way, when you enter into the league as a new owner, you have to kick back a certain percentage to all the other owners. So every time they get a new owner in this league, the guys like Dan Rooney get like $30 million or $20 million or something.
Any team?
I'm saying.
Every team.
If you buy a team?
There's like a buy-in amount that you have to give all the teams.
Is that just anybody or just an expansion?
Anyone.
And do you have to like get initiated and get
beat
on the
ass? So like when Ziggy Wilf took over from Minnesota, he had a kick in.
I think he had a kick back to all the other owners something just to get into the club.
But that just further illustrates the point I'm saying. Why would these guys get off their butts and go out there and try to find a naming rights, you know?
Some do, though. Daniel Snyder collects that $30 million, another $30 million over here, another $10 million over here.
He
adds 1,000 seats.
That's why I side with them.
You're saying they don't.
I'm saying, yeah, those other guys don't have to, and that's why I side with the guys that do, because they don't have to either. But they do.
And those cheap Roonies have been complaining about money for the last three decades, and I'm sick of hearing about it. You know what I mean? We can't pay these guys. We can't pay this guy.
Can't pay anybody because of the salary cap. That's my point. If you can't afford it, get out.
And they flash
their 5 rings.
At the same time, they say, well, we don't want to raise our ticket prices. Well, you don't have to, because your stadium was built by Pittsburgh.
Right.
You don't have to pay back.
You have wacko fans who travel all around the country with you and buy yellow towels every other day.
But for the good of the league, you should raise them a little bit.
Because the fans will still pay it in Pittsburgh.
You're not gouge your fans.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't
them,
look,
just
I think
to
it's
show
great.
That you're contributing to the league.
Right. I think it's great if the teams don't want to raise their ticket prices and they truly believe in that and they're not just doing it for the, you know, for the good PR hit. You know, look, that's admirable. If you're cutting into your profits because you just don't believe in gouging the ticket prices. But don't, at the same time, cry poor mouth and say, I can't compete if the salary cap goes up to $100 million from $95 million or whatever, $110 million. Is that the proposal?
$110
million. I can't compete from $95 to $110 because I have to keep my prices down at a certain level. Obviously, if your prices were at a level that you weren't making a profit on them, you'd be raising them. So you're making a profit.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a tough one.
Rooney in particular seems to have gotten under my skin.
I noticed.
I don't like him. I don't like the whole family. I can't stand them.
I don't like the way they look, and I don't like the way they
I'm
dress.
I'm just saying, the way that they're always crying like they don't have
well,
any
every
money,
year it's the same thing. We can't, you know, we have to draft great because, you know, in 3 years we're going to be losing these guys. You know, we can't afford to sign. They never sign anybody in free agency. They never re-sign. I mean, you know, very rarely do they re-sign a quality free agent.
Right,
you
when
know,
they signed Hines Ward,
Hines
my
Ward
head
was,
almost exploded.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
I mean, a guy has to be of that caliber to finally get re-signed. I mean, that's the, I mean, basically the equivalent of re-signing you know, Troy Brown in his prime.
Right.
You know, a guy who's absolutely done everything possible for Pittsburgh.
But doesn't it just get down to, like, human nature? I mean, there's a certain group of people that are going to work their butts off no matter what. And I mean, for example, Tom and I just got back from the combine.
Right.
And I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus or anything. But in that room, there's a certain number of people who are just boom, 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 bouncing from player to player, doing this, doing, you know. And then there's other people that are just coasting by, collecting transcripts that other people send them via email, writing one little crappy story, and getting by.
Here, okay? He didn't really know exactly what he was doing.
No, but like, you seriously, Tom and I
sit at the table.
Were overwhelmed at times.
He said, there's food at the table? Right.
No, he doesn't eat anything. But, you know,
did they feed you there?
Yeah, sandwiches.
Yeah. No, we were because they'll just bring players in waves, and we'll try to hit them all.
Yeah, you're trying to get as much as you can. Others are sitting with their feet up. You know, they'll collect the transcripts at 5, write one story on something everybody else did, and call it a day. I mean, and it's not just like young guys like Tom and I. Oh, we're trying to make our mark, whatever. Rich Goslin is as active as anyone, as annoying as anyone as well, just to throw that out there. But he's done his homework. He knows more than anybody. He's got a binder on every player. He's flipping through, asking him about sophomore year in high school, while there's other guys that are just like, so, did you get your measurements?
No.
Oh, that's all I got. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, be thankful for there's guys like that because it makes it easier for you guys to stand out.
I agree.
All right. Gary, let's take a break. We come back. We'll get to your emails.
From sixth round draft pick in 2000 to three-time Super Bowl champion and two-time MVP, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady has done it all. Until now.
Tom Brady watches a 60-yard.
Tom Brady is 2005 Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. And now you can get an autographed copy of the SI cover personally autographed by the perennial Pro Bowler himself. It's the must-have keepsake for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Sportsman of the Year Sports Illustrated cover autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 500 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
I'm Teddy Bruschi. You know there's no team like the Patriots. And no place like home field. No fans like ours. No victories like we've had.
And the Patriots have done it again. And no better way to keep up with all of it than Patriots On Demand.
Introducing Patriots On Demand, exclusively with Comcast Digital Cable. It's your ticket to the Patriots all year long with Patriots video news, game highlights on Pat's replay, press conferences, and more. Just go to NFL Network On Demand and select from the Patriots On Demand menu to watch whenever you're ready. So call 1-800-COMCAST today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages.
There's nothing else like Patriots On Demand.
That's 1-800-COMCAST. Call today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages. Offer ends 1-106. Restrictions apply. Offer does not include applicable taxes and additional fees. Call for availability, pricing, equipment, and service details. NFL Network On Demand and Patriots On Demand are subject to the NFL's blackout policy. Following the promotional period, regular rates apply unless service is canceled by calling 1-800-COMCAST.
Looking for the perfect item for the big game? Wear what the pros wear exclusively from the Patriots Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your New England Patriots.
Tom Brady touchdown Patriots!
And New England Revolution official apparel.
Unbelievable! Taylor Twellman! The Reds! Unbelievable!
The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots and Revolution gear anywhere, including many items that you can't get anywhere else. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts and hats to specialty items like flags, commemorative prints, and collectibles. With a huge selection of Patriots items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Patriots Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public 7 days a week, except during home games. Can't get to the stadium? The Patriots Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at Patriots.com. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you are any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
This is PFW in progress.
Buck melanoma. Bully Russell's wart. Not her wart. I'm the wart. She's my tumor. My growth. My pimple. I'm Uncle Wart. Just old Buck Wart Russell. That's what they call me. Or, melanoma head. They'll call me that.
PFW in progress.
Don't give me any crap, Maisie.
I'm telling you, you said crap.
There's nothing wrong with crap.
Oh, really? I thought that was a swear.
No, you're thinking of sh**.
With Fred Kirsch.
Forget that we were perfectly happy. So thank them for getting treated like sh**t every day.
I'm telling on that one.
Paul Perillo.
What did you have, a few drinks this morning? Huh? I think you did, didn't you? In the field of local live home entertainment. Oh, my God!
You low-life, lying, four-flushing sack of shit.
And Andy. And Andy.
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On the rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story. What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
Andy Hart.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid. That's my job.
Some guy named Tom.
Your girlfriend?
Friend? And yes, she is a girl.
Are you supposed to marry her or something?
The subject has come up, yes, but nothing serious.
Maybe if you got married, you'd stop being such an ass.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
Look, I'm just calling to say I miss you. No, I haven't been drinking. I've been thinking a lot about you. I think about those two little dimples on your buns. What did we call them? One was on the right was Lyndon and the left was Johnson, I think. No, that was your boobs. We did. Oh, your boobs were Minnie and Mickey. I remember that because of Disney World. And Felix. Felix is what we called your...
PFW in progress.
Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
All right. So we're talking about the CBA.
All right.
Talking about the CBA, but, you know, like I said, Paul, all right. Not Ooh, Paul, but Andy that? And Tom have just got back from the combine. Give us some of your impressions. What you guys do over there?
Well, we talked to all, you know, a whole bunch of different players.
Well, let's get it out there.
St. Elmo's. Profess your man love for the three or four guys that you guys are in love with.
Vernon Lewis.
Richard.
Which
Richard's name? The cornerback from Fresno State?
Marshall.
Richard Marshall.
You kind of get an idea where the Patriots may be headed just by talking to players. Right. Now, it doesn't mean these are the players they're going to draft, but it seemed like they were talking to a lot of mid-round running backs and not the upper echelon
right.
running backs. So me and Andy kind of feel they might not be looking that way. Richard Marshall.
I told you that 2 months ago, but you laughed at me. Anyway,
I told you it was a dumb idea, and it's still a dumb idea.
Okay, all right.
Mike Mayock told me you can't get crap unless you get it early.
So you're going
to get crap. Richard Marshall was a guy's name who was floated out there. I called his agent, and his agent said that the Patriots have shown interest and seem to like him. Now, Marshall, people out there might not think he's going to be a first-round draft pick, but he was moving into that first-round range, and after the 4.38 40 he ran at the combine, he's going in the first round.
He said that he would... He said he would be a first-round pick after he runs.
The one time he showed any personality and cockiness and it was when I asked him if he thought his stock was rising, and he said, yeah, but it really will after Tuesday when I run.
And he ran a 4.38
So. Another guy that we, you know,
are we sure on that?
I've talked about on here, and me and Andy like is Bobby Carpenter, the linebacker from Ohio State, actually built his game after Mike Vrabel.
Better than AJ Hawk, or
no? AJ Hawk's,
but AJ Hawk is
not in their level.
As Romeo Crennel said, there's one guy in this draft who could come in and have the instant impact, like Sean Merriman. He plays up the street at Columbus, and his initials are A and J.
Well, I watched his workout, and he's very quick.
Yeah. Plus you watch him play, and he's not that fast. He ran a
4.62
Very quick.
He's good.
And he's a proven playmaker.
Seems pretty fast for a linebacker, though. Although I guess there are some outside
freaks.
Guys now.
I mean, when you got Vernon Davis at 2.60 shredded and running whatever he ran a 4.4
and at 2.60 ran a 4.4
Mario Williams 2.96 ran a 4.6 or 4.58
Andy Lawson was pretty impressive.
Yeah,
huh?
Very.
I mean,
impressive.
You see guys that put up some freakish numbers, obviously.
Carpenter's a guy who can play inside and outside, but says. He prefers to be the edge rusher off the end. So he's a guy that we think if the Patriots, depending on what happens in the receiver position, me and Andy think Maurice Stovall could be a very, very good possibility in the first round, even if they trade down a little bit, because he said he would fit into the Patriot system perfectly. He's had talks with the Patriots, and obviously we know the connection with Charlie Weiss.
Yep.
So those were three guys that we came away with.
Yeah,
pretty impressed with.
Trying to think of other guys. Well, first of all, just from straight freak factor.
All right, go ahead.
Vernon Davis, Broderick Bunkley,
amazing.
You know, Chad Jackson ran the 4.3 40 Who I saw in a thing has tremendous hands. I watched him do the drill. Great hands. That's some of the other thing. You watch
Chad
guys.
Chad Jackson
that,
would have been a top 10 pick if Steve Spurrier was the head coach of Florida.
Right. Because he's just lacking a little bit of the production, but he's legit. But you watch some of those drills and guys. Some guys don't belong in the same class as other guys. You watch. I watched one guy get knocked over by the ball when it got thrown to him.
But you know what's funny? It's just like when we watch training camp and you see, you know, Troy Brown do that little box drill, and you look like he's done it, you know, every day of his life.
And Ricky Bryant does it and goes 0-for-4
And the ball goes through. You know, sometimes the ball doesn't even make contact with his hands.
Yeah, he stays with the league for 3 years, not in the league. But I mean, you can't all have. You know, the stud guys. You got to find those guys that are the next tier.
But then at the same time, if you watch David Patton do those drills, you'd think that he's the best receiver in the NFL. Right.
And that's
so
why
some guys are really
it's
good
a
at
the whole package. Of different things. It's all a big, you know, the interview. The thing for the combine is from the people we talk to, the biggest thing seems to be the interview process. They get to know these guys. If you have personal issues, you get to explain them to the NFL people what happened. And
so what happened? What happened?
Said
was.
She was 18.
But what was the who was the one guy, Andy, who tripped in the bushes? Who's the one guy? Who's the one guy?
It's Nicholson, right?
Yeah,
AJ Nicholson.
AJ Nicholson from Florida.
Quote unquote.
State.
First of all, I wasn't running from the police. I happened to be running down the alley to go back and get my ID. And is it true you hid in the bushes? No. See, what happened was I tripped right when they were coming, and I fell into the bushes. Said it with a straight face. And then the one mistake I made with the woman was. You're not supposed to have women in after hours. I invited her in. When I asked her to leave, she got angry. Yeah, I'm buying all this. Keep talking. You are a blue chip prospect.
Oh, my God.
And then Winston Justice of USC, the offensive tackle, was suspended for a year because he pulled a toy gun on somebody. And he said he thought it was a car full of friends. So a couple of them jumped out with guns in front of the car.
Oh,
but it wasn't the people they thought it was.
Oh, my God.
That's a classic.
But all these little things, I mean, you see got the LSU guys, there's the receiver, Skylar Green, said the Patriots very interested, Jarvis Green's cousin.
Yeah, no, Jason, for those that didn't read it on the web, Jason Avant is good friends with Rodney Harrison, and he works out with him, and he said he said Harrison would call him up at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, I just did 200 push-ups and 200 sit-ups, what are you doing? And then hang up the phone. He said the guy's nuts.
So we got all kinds of Kyle Williamson, a defensive lineman from LSU, is one of those guys where you say he's not the best. He says he doesn't look the part, but he has experience in the Saban system.
High
played
motor
the 4.334
High motor
guy. Right. And is like the perfect guy. You know, he's just a hard worker who wants to make your team better, will never embarrass your team. And
okay. There's two guys that I want to get your opinion of because I'm hearing a lot about them. And all of a sudden, Jay Cutler is like
very
better
funny.
Than Matt Leiner.
Right. Great interview.
I hear,
yeah, great
I hear
interview.
Some people actually putting him higher than Matt
Mike
Leiner.
Mayock says he's the best quarterback in the draft.
And then the second guy I want to talk about is DeBrickashaw Ferguson, just because I like saying his name.
Okay, well, Cutler.
And it's weird. He can't say like John Smith, but he says DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
The thing about Cutler is he's got some, you know, athletic ability and could be a good quarterback in this league. But when
strong.
You hear, but when
23
you hear him
reps.
Talk, yeah. When you hear him talk, let me put it this way. After his interview, Michael Smith turned to me and said, that's all I need to hear. I'd take that guy first in the draft.
Right.
Really?
So there you go.
He's that good?
He's that, because he's a. He was almost mad that Vince Young and Matt Leiner weren't competing against
right.
him.
He was.
Wanted them to compete.
He's very disappointed. He somebody asked, are you throwing? Yeah. It's no big deal. I've been throwing all my life.
Yeah, so he's just,
well, it
just
is
throwing.
No big deal. I don't know why these guys don't do it.
Well, I can see their reasoning. I mean, if you go to a pro day, you're working with a wide receiver you know, at a place you know, it's your perfect setup.
Let's just say you have a bad day at the combine.
Right.
Are these guys that stupid, these scouts, that they're going to erase everything you've done in college because
well,
you had
that's
a bad the
day argument
at the combine?
From the personnel side is if you run here, if you throw here and have a bad day, you have a chance to improve on it on
it's
your pro day. If you have a bad pro day and didn't do anything at the combine, you're screwed because
yeah.
you don't have a chance to make it up.
You're right.
And you're also not working
Vince
out.
Young, you're going to take Vince Young.
Right.
Wonderless to some degree,
whatever,
yes.
It doesn't matter.
I want to see a guy.
But from an agent's
every time,
perspective.
Every time somebody throws down a glove, he's there to compete.
But
right.
from an agent's perspective. He doesn't want any of those black marks on him, and he says, if I can control the environment perfectly,
right.
it can help my client.
But, you know, these scouts know that. They
yeah,
know
everybody
that
knows it. It's a big game.
Oh, you know, whatever he does at the combine, his time might be a little bit better in his pro day. They
well,
know that.
McKay,
they're not fooling anyone.
But there's two schools of thought, and that you have the agent and the players that say, I want to control it.
Yeah.
You have the other guys that say,
well, you know,
if you're fast, you're fast wherever you run, so you're fast.
And you know what, pal? When you get to the NFL, you can't control anything.
But at that point,
on a different field but, every Sunday.
But what's different at that point? You already have $15 million in your back pocket, and you didn't cost yourself anything.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers told a bunch of players in a room, listen, I'm going to two pro days.
Right.
That's it.
That's it.
He said, and they said there was like 60 colleges in that room, and he said, I'm only going to two pro days. So if you don't work out here, I'm not going to see you.
Right.
Well, you know what? Rich McKay's an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
Well,
because then he's not doing his homework.
Because then you're not doing your job. Now,
no. He's not going.
He's
they're sending people
scout.
To every
what
pro.
What I'm saying is if everybody did that, then they would make guys work out of the combine. But
you get so literal. He was trying to make a point.
I understand what he's trying to make a point, but I think it's a stupid one.
Look, now he hates Rich McKay. First it was Dan Rooney, now he hates Rich McKay. You hate everybody in the league? Angry Paul strikes.
Scott Pioli only going to two pro days?
I have no idea how many he's going
no,
to.
No one's.
He works harder than any other GM in football, so he'll be at all 32.
You had a little interaction with Bill Belichick while you were there.
Yeah, he wanted to know. I was stupid enough to open my mouth about Don Shula's restaurant. We were sitting in a Don Shula steakhouse, and he was looking around, and he goes, boy, Don's done a lot with this restaurant. And I go, he's got quite a few now, I think, around. And he goes, well, how many does he have? And I go, oh, I don't know the exact number. And he goes, was it like 5, 15? 10, 15, 20. So knowing I had got bitten off more than I can chew, I just said, I think it's around 20, just to get out of the conversation.
I think it's actually like about 6.
Right.
That's all right.
How long does it take you to think these up?
It was good stuff, though. I was entertained sitting next to him.
So did you have dinner with him?
No.
No, God, no.
Just waiting to get...
Although certain other reporters thought they were having dinner with him and were surprised when we didn't eat.
Really?
Yeah.
Certain reporters you don't like.
JT the
Well, that Rick? Doesn't really narrow it down.
Well, there was only two reporters there, right?
And you don't like either.
Well, I don't dislike
it. It was the high motor guy.
So, were you at? Did you eat at Shula's?
Who happens to have the lowest motor on the face of the earth?
No, I just don't think that either one of those guys.
Right, I had brought up the idea of eating at Shula's, but he said if we ate at Shula's and St. Elmo's, you'd put a bullet in both of our heads. When we got back.
I assume Shula's was probably pricey too.
Oh, it's pricey. But I think St. Elmo was more.
Well, we were going to St. Elmo's. It was going to be Shula's in addition to St. Elmo's.
Because I told them, you would have gotten mad at them if they didn't go to St. Elmo's.
Oh, yeah. I think you should.
Almost as mad as Tom got when he goes, why is my shrimp in the cocktail sauce? What's going on here? How'd you think I was going to eat that, he says to me.
Let me go to Indianapolis, Fred. I'll go to St. Elmo's.
By the way, I
it's legit.
Locally, I went to the new Ruth's Chris here in Boston. Unbelievable.
Are they a sponsor? Should we be ringing them up?
But it was one of the best steaks I've ever had.
Hey, you know why I don't like that place?
What?
I can't say the name.
Ruth's Chris.
Yeah,
it is a dumb name.
Yeah.
One more note on risers, fallers, like, dislike. Lendale White. Bust written all over him.
Really?
One fat bastard.
Wow.
Takes his shirt off, looks like Paul. I mean, it was an embarrassment.
and my pick for a bust... My pick for bust is your boy, DeBrickashaw.
DeBrickashaw Ferguson?
Yeah.
That's one that that could bite. I mean, mine could bite me in the butt, too, but...
Well, because
the way people talk about him, that could really bite you in the butt.
See, I think the overwhelming evidence.
I don't know anything about it. I just
people talk that way about Tony Mandarich.
I know. But there's a difference there. Tony Mandarich was all artificial, and that's why he was a bust.
Right, but he's the DeBrickashaw is very tall, and he has trouble with inside. I'm just saying. Me and him sat down and said there's going to be three or four guys in the top 10 who will bust.
I would just
who
say
who do you think they would be? And I'm saying DeBrickashaw based purely on his physique, his long stature.
No, I know that
not
you,
because of his attitude.
I know that because you know you explained to me what your reasoning is. I would just say that if I had to go on record and pick a bust, a top 10 pick bust, an offensive lineman that was rated to be in the top 10 would be the last one I would choose because. So in my opinion, scouts bend over backwards not to put offensive linemen that highly rated. You have to be
Robert Gallery.
Unbelievable. I wouldn't say he's a bust yet.
He's not worthy of the second pick.
He's on a bad team and he's not even playing left tackle.
That's different.
I'm telling you,
he was supposed to be a stud left tackle and he's playing right tackle for a crappy team.
For 2 years,
you need to be coached up.
Jonathan Ogden didn't play left tackle right away either.
Put Gallery on the Patriots and he'd be an All-Pro.
Well, listen, it's not about the position. It's just a guy's name. Oh,
but
Williams. I think there's been plenty of offensive line busts.
I mean, see, I think Mike Williams would be an example and Tony Mandarich would be an example, but I think there are far more Orlando Paces and Jonathan Ogdens out there and Tony Baselli's that if they get rated
that
highly, generally they pan out.
Me and Andy saw a list of the top offensive tackles taken in the past like 10 years and it was not.
And
if I take a tackle top 5, I want him to be Orlando Pace.
That's what it was.
I'm not paying him to be Robert Gallery. I'll develop in 6 years into an okay left tackle.
So you didn't like Jonathan Ogden as a pick then?
I have no idea how long it took him.
It took him a couple of years to develop Jonathan Ogden.
Was he playing left tackle? I don't know that. I'm not sure I trust you on that one.
I just made it up.
We do that sometimes.
I don't.
It's called a Paul Perillo.
No, it's not.
We kind of skipped over color.
Lack of knowledge is called an Andy
Hart. What was it about what he said in the interview that made him so...
He commanded the room.
Who were we talking about? Jay Cutler.
When he was up there, the room was...
He was a quarterback.
You know,
you can tell he's a quarterback.
The last question
was,
Jay, you're kind of a laid-back kind of guy. Is the money going to change you? And he leaned into the microphone and he goes, well, we'll find out soon, won't we?
He was good. Guy, he was no question. Good. The media end, he'll be a superstar. Okay. Now, if he can play is the other question.
I only saw him play once.
Right, and we all have to be honest. As much college football as I watch, I've only seen him play a couple of times. Vanderbilt just isn't on TV very often.
I saw him once, and he was...
A games, though, this year.
Yeah.
They had a good year for them.
Yeah. And but, he admitted
they
we got
games?
Robbed in
I think
Florida.
They were like 500.
Paul, you'd like this. He said we got robbed in Florida.
They got screwed in that game. You saw that. Yeah. That was the one game I saw him play, and he was terrific that night.
But he definitely lives up to quick release, strong arm, all the things you hear about him
How
when you watch him throw.
He?
6'3".
So he's not... As tall as DB.
He's good size, though. I mean, 6'3 is fine.
I don't care about 6'3. If he's 6'3 and can throw, he can throw. 6'4, I don't care.
Some would make the argument that Drew's too tall.
Now, if he's 5'11, 5'7, boy.
Wait and see. I mean, you know, some teams are going to like him more than others.
Reggie Bush. Legit in every aspect. You see him.
Oh, we
commands the room, does all that.
You guys already said that, but the definitive statement from Bill Belichick.
If he's available at 21, they will take it.
The Patriots will select. That is a guarantee.
Who says that he never says anything?
He's on the record.
There's a guarantee.
Good. I like it. I love
He also clearly likes.
That is the quote of the week.
Vernon Davis. He brought him up on his own, saying, "Now, if a guy like Vernon Davis is there, you got to trade up and get him or something." You know, he clearly thinks he's a stud too.
And there's a lot of other people who believe that now after the combine.
Yeah. Dude knows Vernon. The test, right?
Was he the winner? Was he?
We'll
the,
see.
The workout warrior. Was he the Mike Mamula?
I think him, Manny Lawson probably greatly improved his draft stock.
Nick Mangold was pretty impressive for an offensive lineman center guy.
Nick Mangold sounds like he should be performing in Vegas or something.
Jarius Norwood of Mississippi State dominated every drill he was in. He probably might have moved himself into that second round area as a running back.
And Chad Jackson, I think.
Chad Jackson.
A guy who wasn't at like a Senior Bowl, doesn't necessarily have all the production, but... Can catch the ball and ran a ridiculous 40.
All right, so you mentioned Lendale White's off the board.
No,
he's off the first round.
He's off my board.
Oh. Okay, Lendale White's still going in.
He's
the top
going in the first. He's going in the first round. They just didn't like him.
What about Maroney?
Maroney is 217. He's going up boards, I think, because he came in heavy. He was mad.
That was the question.
He was listed at 205 in college, and he's not 205. And I like the way he answered the, well, you shared carries. And he said, well, you know why? He said, I do whatever it takes to help my team win. He said, I think it kept me fresh for the pros. He said, I don't have that wear and tear on my body. And I like the way he answered it. And plus, that doesn't bother me because, like I said to Andy, when Cadillac and Ronnie Brown came out last year, I had no questions about it. Because if you have two good running backs in college, you're going to play them both. Because a lot of times you're beating teams 50 to nothing.
Right. Just like Bush and
I was going to say, are we not going to take Reggie Bush in the top two picks because he shared carries?
So I think
Moreau. How about he averaged 8 yards a carry?
And I always get leery of, you know, I know Andy's guy. I know you like him just because of the name, the Michael Hart from Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 2 years ago, he was like a true freshman getting like 40 carries in Big Ten games. I don't want that guy in 4 years. I'll be honest with you. I don't care how good he is.
Well, actually, Lendale White said that, and you got to kind of weave through his weird thought process, but he said one reason he didn't go back is because he would have been the guy. He listed all the guys that were coming out. He would have had to carry the team and get 48 carries a game.
His theory is accurate. I think in practice it was wrong because I think, like Tom said, plus, they have some young running backs right now that next year, we don't know now. Next year we're going to know all about
it. I checked because I wanted to know. Not next year, but in the list of NFLDraftScout.com goes ahead. They have the 2008 prospects by position. 2008, not next year's draft, the year after. Number two overall is a
running back from USC.
Yeah, I know they have somebody there who's supposed to be a superstar.
Yeah, he would have been lucky if he got 3 carries a game this year if Wendale White came.
Plus, if he goes back to school, he's probably about 290 by the end of next season, and he's an offensive lineman.
And then at the same time, I disagree with the people who think just because Reggie Bush got 15 carries a game, that's all he's going to get in the pros.
Right.
Charlie Casserly made a good point.
Tremendous.
He said, okay, let's say the guy only gets 17 to 20 touches a game. He said, Randy Moss only gets 7 to 8 touches a game, and he's hard to stop.
Right.
He said, Reggie Bush is a kind of player that changes the game offensively, so you don't have to give him the ball 40 times to do it.
Just being out there.
Right.
He's averaging 8 yards a touch, I'll give him the ball.
I think if he can get 15 carries a game
and like 5 or 6,
I take him in a heartbeat. Because I
know those 15 carries get you to a point in the game where you take out Reggie Bush and put in some hog to get 15 carries to close out the game.
And his receptions aren't going to be those flat passes like
the fullbacks. A game breaker.
They're going to be down the seam.
He's a game breaker. And then one other guy, D'Angelo Williams, is going to be a tremendous player, but he's not a Patriot. Ooh, yep.
Oh, really?
He was just working the room. He's joking about, they told me I had a stress fracture in my foot. I didn't know anything about it. I think when I get out of here, I'm going to be more hurt than when I came in. And he's just like,
he's not like a cocky talker. He's just a yapper.
Yeah, just guys ask things and just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Well, that's good stuff. And, you know, the league has done more and more to make the combine an event for the media, and I think it can only help.
Expanded to new rooms this year. If you want to talk about just size, they had one large media room, and then they had auxiliary media room set off.
I think they're smart.
All the coverage,
and you wonder, for so long there was this whole veil of secrecy that was around the combine, and we had no idea what they did in there. And it's like, it just makes you know that most of the people in the NFL on these teams are idiots.
That's what we talked about.
Which brings us full circle to, do we really want to stick with that Dan Rooney tradition of how great the league was run when it was totally irrelevant 8 months of the year?
Right.
Fred, it's relevant all 12 months.
We went to a breakfast with, I forgot what it was called, but it had Heath Miller, Ronnie Brown, a guy from Reebok, and Gil Brandt. And it was all just talking about the combine, where it came from, how it helped Ronnie Brown, and Heath Miller couldn't run, this, that. It was just an informative thing. And Gil Brandt was talking about how it started. And, he was a big innovator with the Cowboys and all that. And he was talking about how they had a computer in 60 or 61. Yeah. They had a computer the size of a huge table that, did some stuff. But it came about because Nolan Cromwell was coming into their offices with a stack of x-rays under his arm. And as Gil Brandt put it, it was probably the 12th stop he had made in like 12 days to different teams trying to explain his medical history. And he said to the owner, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Tech Schramm. Said,
and then
be something we can do.
So they started a small one, and then it just grew from there.
It was a mini combine the next year of like 7 or 8 teams did one.
And then they finally, but the Cowboys were on the edge doing those kinds of things, looking for new ways to do stuff. And that's why we always talk about it. It seems like if you're at all innovative in the NFL, you automatically go to the forefront because everybody else is lazy.
Yeah, when they first started the combine, the Cardinals and the Steelers didn't want to go because they didn't want to pay the money to get there.
Is that right?
Speaking of the Cardinals,
I believe it.
One last night.
Patriots too. Patriots too.
I know for a fact that up until recently, you know.
Yeah, the Sullivans couldn't afford it either.
The Bengals, and I know this for a fact right from a scout's mouth, that there was up to maybe 5 or 6 years ago, after the season, they'd hand the coaches clipboards and say, go scout.
Right.
Because they didn't have scouts.
That's true. Marvin Lewis actually put an end to all that.
Yeah.
Another about the Cardinals, I told Andy I was very, very excited about Denny Green speaking because Denny Green is my favorite coach because he's anti-Belichick. He'll just tell you anything. He'll tell you who we want to draft, who we want to pick up in free agency. So someone had asked him a question about the Patriots, and he basically said the Patriots fell ass backwards into a quarterback.
Two guys, he said. Bill Belichick, a guy who had a lot more success the second time around, and a quarterback that nobody in this room thought was going to be the player, even close to the player he ended up being.
So
unless you think you're going to find the next Tom Brady, you can't copy what the Patriots did.
Well,
a little bit of a shot in there, don't you think?
No matter what the system ends up being as a result of the CBA or as a result of no CBA, the teams with the smart front offices will win.
Oh, right.
I don't care
exactly.
What.
That's what I.
That's
Paul
pretty
and
much
I were talking
word
about
word
this
when
morning.
I wrote in an SPFW that I just posted yesterday.
Bill Belichick will succeed in any system.
That's doesn't right. matter what the system is. They have the pieces in place to succeed.
Right.
He just
and,
wants
and
to know the system.
The only way it would hurt them is if the Patriots just flat out didn't have the money to offer. But, you know. In an open,
you're right, because
form.
The Cowboys have a lot of money to spend, but I can get the drafts for the last 10 years of the Dallas Cowboys, and most of those guys aren't even in the league because
right.
Jerry Jones is the one running the drafts.
Yeah.
So it yeah. doesn't matter how much money you have to spend. Smart people who make the best decisions, those are the teams that are going to win.
Always,
right?
always.
But
that's
Bill.
Why, that's why when Gibbs came into the league, a lot of people said, oh, has the league passed him by? Look, it's football.
Right. He either knows
okay.
it or he doesn't.
He went from football as a champ to NASCAR to be a successful owner
champ.
of a
right.
you know, of a
multiple
NASCAR.
Teams, right?
Yeah.
He started.
I mean, what could be different, more different? So now he's going to go back to football and he's going to fail?
That was
I don't think so.
That was laughable.
Yeah.
2 years he was back in the playoffs with Mark Brunell as his quarterback.
Right. Right.
Throwing for 42 yards or something.
Continuing his trek of just doesn't, you know, you talk about a guy.
That made Mark
me
Rippon?
And not my personality. How many different quarterbacks, and none of them, you know, beyond Theismann, who I think was also highly overrated, but beyond Theismann, I mean, Doug Williams, Mark Rippon, Jay Schrader. I mean.
I think Mark Rippon sucked.
They never had a good quarterback.
I never thought much of him. And I remember 1 year, he goes from nobody to they win the Super Bowl. The next year, like, I was collecting
was like
football
the,
cards at
like
that time.
MVP.
He was like the cover boy for everything.
He was like the MVP that year.
No, I know. But I didn't think
But he stunk.
I didn't think much of him.
I agree with you.
All right.
Plus,
well,
he was too ugly,
too.
Too ugly to be
very ugly.
Webradio@patriots.com is email address. Let's get to some emails.
Talk about our food, though.
What about the food?
Oh, yeah, I thought you might want to run down where we ate and stuff. Kind of.
Well, we know you ate it.
I'm just going to mention one thing. Right, this what? Guy ate a one-pound hamburger.
Oh, by the way, I saw that Visa commercial last night. Are you exaggerating?
The Ram
no.
Brewery.
Would you say,
right across.
Would you say
I saw that Visa commercial last night.
It wasn't quite that big.
No wonder you're spending so much time in the toilet.
It was in that range.
And 11 bucks. Can you imagine you get a one-pound burger for like a normal price of 11 bucks?
This was a steak.
You can go to Boston Tim's. They have one-pound burgers, and it's cheaper than 11 bucks.
I don't think Fuddruckers cost that much either. They have one.
This thing was huge. I was horrified.
I had some good nachos. The steak, though, at St. Elmo's.
What's wrong with you ordering one-pound hamburgers?
It was on the
even
menu.
I don't do that.
What are you doing?
It's not like
the
I
last
said,
night,
here's
too.
The deal.
I don't even do that.
It's not like I asked them to make me a one-pound burger. It's on the menu.
Yeah, but you don't have to order it.
But the funny
but it's out there. That means other people order it, or they wouldn't have it on the menu.
Fred,
the
yes.
funny
thing is though, this was the last day.
Either a one-pound chicken, one-pound hamburger, or a whole chicken.
Right.
So, you know.
The funny thing is, this was the last day, so we were starting to feel fat. So we had gone to the gym. So
oh,
we,
I can see you two ladies walking around in.
Does my butt look big in these pants?
But you know when you go out to eat and you stuff yourself for 4 days straight. So we started to go into the
yes,
gym and stuff.
It.
So it was the last night, and we're walking, and he's like, "Take it easy tonight." He goes,
and he has a one-pounder
because we had a 7 o'clock flight, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to have any explosions on a little airplane, and,
oh,
and so I had a one-pound burger. But speaking of ladies.
Hello,
first night
ladies.
We're there. No. Well, there was a cheerleading convention that he was way too interested
a
in.
A cheerleading convention?
I like young girls.
Of course, these girls were like 3 years old.
Gary, please tell me you can do something with that.
Gary won't do anything. He likes young girls.
That's just.
Hey, I like it before they go to college and get fat. Not a shit.
It is what it is.
That's actually the line he used when we were walking back, and they were all because it was weird because they were in the streets. In cheerleading uniforms, like just going to dinner, and it's very awkward.
I don't know what regulations we're being regulated by, but I'm sure we just
But
young girls.
Yeah, it took over way more people for that than NFL. I mean, there was just thousands of them.
Can I give you a quick aside?
Like, you know, sponsored by Tampax, one of those things.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know how they have.
Okay.
Well,
let's get to Paul. What Paul wants to say is cleaner.
Have you ever noticed that? You know, you're flipping through and you're on ESPN. It's like Saturday afternoon. They got this cheerleading competition, and they're all out there dancing. They got this big Tampax poster behind them. It's embarrassing. Why do they do that?
Why would you ever stop long enough?
Let's turn it over. Andy
Hart. Those girls are a little old for me, Fred.
But first, let's turn it over. Andy
Hart. But Tom did say after our first meal, "Oh, that's a salad. No, that's a salad."
Well, you know, Fred,
anything gay or ever been said?
No, you know how you go to these restaurants and you order a $12 salad and they give you a bowl this big?
Right, right.
This place actually gave you a $12 worth of salad.
Yeah.
So I was happy with it.
Okay.
It was a bruschetta salad, too.
Don't
make it sound like it was a side salad.
Is that Houlihan's?
It had
Champs?
Bruschetta in it.
I'll have the side salad.
It had cheese on it. I mean, this was a fattening salad. Don't let them kid you.
That is so
still a salad.
Gay.
Sally.
All right. Well, you had you ate well. That's good.
We did. We worked hard and we ate well.
That St. Elmo's is good though. Huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I just like the whole atmosphere, the whole thing about it. You know.
That was a good.
And I liked that we slid right in, and I was surprised. Good thing for that medical emergency that cleared the place out.
All right. Okay. Let's get to some emails. Jason W. writes in. Can somebody please explain a bit about the NFLPA? Seems like the union in itself is influenced a great deal by player agents. Why, then, the meeting last Friday with the top ones? It seems so unfair for rookies who come into the league to get big bucks for doing nothing, while vets who approve themselves may or may not get big paydays. What other union allows new members to control things like that? My thought is that the players get pushed aside because of the agents and big money they will get. One reason I am sure a slotted rookie pay scale would not make it with this union. Actually, it does, right? Wondering when the players will have more say in their union. Upshaw, to me, he's a buffoon who keeps walking away from the negotiation table. If he thinks the players will be better off uncapped, do note that the cap has a minimum and that some teams will go way under that, what they paid before. So a lot of players will get less money. Where's the benefit? And if they decertify and are looking for something better, they need to see how the wind is blowing. More anti-unionism here than in decades. Methinks that if Upshaw breaks the golden goose, his goose is cooked.
The meeting that Upshaw had, if I'm not mistaken, was with agents, wasn't it?
It was with agents. That's correct.
Nothing to do with rookies
and an agent
deciding things.
Works on behalf of a player. He's a representative of a player, and he gets paid a percentage of what the player gets paid.
And it wasn't with the top agents. It was actually a cross-section of agents.
I think he was just explaining the landscape of what's going to happen if we don't get a deal, and you guys get a lot of work to do because it's going to be confusing. Don't screw anybody.
Yeah.
I agree.
The thing about
Gene Upshaw for years has been made fun of by Paul Perillo leading the charge for just, yes,
right.
Mr. Tagliabue, whatever you want. And now he's finally digging in a little bit, and people are ripping him for digging in?
No, he can't win. But the whole thing about decertifying the union, the reason he's even throwing that out there is that, you know, right now, basically, in labor laws, what the NFL does is illegal. The reason they get away with it is because a union has agreed to it in a collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
So let's just say that they can't get to an agreement, and the owners wanted to lock the players out like the NHL did. Okay, well, they could do that because of this agreement that they have. But if the union decertifies, okay, there's nothing to lock out. And then if there's no union, then the players can do a class action suit against the league, and that would be going into regular court, and the league would lose. That's why.
What? I don't get it.
Isn't he basically setting up for 2 years from now when the CBA expires?
Right.
Then it'd be because then the NFL.
If I'm an owner, I can't lock people out.
No, you can now. But if there was
not, if you have an agreement, you'd be in violation of the CBA.
No, the CBA allows for striking and lockouts.
I don't know about that.
No.
First of all, the way I look at it is, this is my team and my stadium. If I don't want you coming in, you're not coming in.
I
think that they couldn't do that now, but they're preparing themselves to decertify, so when the CBA expires, the NFL won't be able to lock them out.
They won't be able to lock
them out.
Because
they won't have anything to lock out.
But they'd also be then, regular labor laws would apply to the NFL. And the NFL would not win in court based on the way they do things.
No doubt. No doubt about that.
So if they decertify the union, can I just walk up as, Tom Brady and sign any deal I want that has any kind of rules How does that work?
For a little while, yeah. It would be no use.
I just have a problem with the whole lockout thing. Well, like if I'm an owner, I own this team, I can lock out anybody I want to lock out.
That's a lot of bluster.
But that's totally a lot of bluster. But everything about the way that sports really is set up is kind of unconstitutional. I mean,
it's a monopoly.
The draft.
Right. No, I know.
The draft itself is unconstitutional.
I know.
It's a legal monopoly because both sides agree to it.
Right. No, I know.
Antitrust exemption.
So the courts allow it.
And I can tell you,
this is in 1980. There ain't going to be no lockouts and no strikes. Now we're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars.
I'm not so sure. There's too many people butting heads
here. Too much money now. There's just too much money involved.
But that's the problem. Too many people want too much of the too much money.
At some point, though, someone will have to blink because there's just too much money involved and they'll lose way too much. This sport will lose way more than NHL or Major League Baseball.
Well, they have more to lose.
Or anything else lost.
NHL loses three fans and they get one back. Right. There was only three fans to start.
And to get you back to your point, Andy, though, about the criticism that Upshaw has been under, I would maintain my criticism of him because I feel like he hasn't really done much of a service. And the owners, and Fred talked about it at the beginning, the owners pretty much agree. This 60% thing that he's, you know, supposedly standing hard, in fact, it's not an issue at all. So it's not like he's digging his heels in. The owners are going to give him that. They even say it in here, in Borges' piece, that there's an owner that agrees to that. But the point is,
they wanted 56.
But that's not really the sticking point.
The 56.5, what they threw out there,
56.2
would be agreeable to the other owners based on the, you know, it's a whole proposal. It's not just a number. There's a proposal behind it, and that proposal would be agreeable to all the owners. If they go to 60, now that number has to come from somewhere.
And that's where the nine owners are balking?
That's where the owners would have problems.
Yeah. And it says here, but at least one NFC owner reiterated yesterday his belief that both sides understand the final number will come down around the 60% mark, and it's not truly a stumbling block. And that's why, I mean, I don't think, that's not really the issue. Where I think Upshaw is coming under criticism, and I know that I read Mike Florio wrote a lot about this on Pro Football Talk, and I agree with him, is that he's not really doing his players a service by just sitting there criticizing the owners at every turn. Remember a couple of weeks ago, he just walked away and said, until they get their house in order, there's no sense of us even being here. Look, clearly we know that there's two serious issues here, and the most serious one is the one we spent the first hour of the show talking about with the owners themselves.
Right.
But what business of that is that of Upshaw's?
But what should he be doing?
I would contend that Upshaw, and this is what Florio wrote, and I totally agree with it, Upshaw is Taguibu's mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. Taguibu knows that he's going to look bad in this. If this labor unrest comes down on his watch, it's going to tarnish his tenure as the NFL commissioner.
Right. Many believe he's waiting to get this fixed, and then he's going to leave.
Then he's leaving. All right. Now Florio was speculating that Upshaw is sitting there. He's putting it in a spotlight that the owners need to get in their whole game together, and that's what's causing this whole strife here. And he's kind of made the owners look bad, I thought, about a week and a half ago by just walking out of the meetings when instead of negotiating.
But what should he do if it's not involving
negotiate
him?
For your players.
Well, but here's the thing, Paul.
If you're telling me the issue's between the owners, what should he be doing?
You know, I'm
not involved in the negotiations. I'm saying there are two parts of this whole thing, and he just completely washed his hands.
Well, but you're telling me, based on that quote, that the proposal is pretty people know it's going to end up at 60.
So that's your
finalized
job. Shut up. That's
so
your job is to get that 60%. No, I think that he is trumping for Taguibu, making sure he gets it out there.
I think he's trying to get it out there that the players aren't holding this up. It's the owners.
There's even a rumor that Upshaw is going to take over for Taguibu.
See, I kind of agree with Paul because I'm a conspiracy freak.
I'm totally into this.
And I've also heard that between Taguibu and Upshaw, they've got an agreement. They know what it's going to be.
There's even a rumor that he's going to take over for Taguibu, which is very far-fetched.
I don't think the owners would allow that.
No, I don't either.
Because he's not smart enough. But, you know, that they already have an agreement, and now what Upshaw's doing is playing the bad cop. He's trying to...
That's my point.
Taguibu can't force these owners to do anything. All right, he's just the commissioner. It's still an owner's league.
Mm-hmm. So if Upshaw goes out there and makes them look bad enough, he's going to force them to get in the right.
Doesn't that benefit his players as well? Because his players want them to know, we're not holding this up. We're ready to sign. If they give us, you know, this number, blah, 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 we're ready to sign.
I'm just saying that he's doing whatever Taguibu wants him to do, and I think that's what a lot of people like me have criticized him for in the past.
What else should he be doing? That's my point.
I think he should only be concerned about negotiating. And if there's no negotiating to be had, I don't want to hear from
you. See, I don't have a problem with it because, as I said, I think it's good for him to say, you know what, we've negotiated, we've come to an agreement. It's their end that doesn't have an agreement. players are ready to sign.
I think it's any of his business.
But see, again, Tagliabue really doesn't have the power over the owners. So let's just say Tagliabue and Upshaw kind of...
But doesn't it also benefit the players? All the players in general, for people to know, we're not holding this up. The owners are holding it up.
No matter what happens...
They can't agree.
No matter what happens, the cap... If they come to an agreement, the cap's going up. It's going to benefit players. It's
the
just a matter
Andy,
of who's going to... What's going to... It's not what constitutes that cap. It's the owners arguing with themselves.
Oh, I understand
that. School of thought, Andy, you're just saying that if you keep everything this, the way it is now, it's the best for the players. You know, the 60% thing. So the cap will raise, but the system is going to remain the way it is, and that's the best for the players. There's a school of thought that this system isn't the best for the players.
No.
And I heard some guys talking about that in the last couple of days, and I think some of them, quite frankly, have made some interesting points about it, about the cap maybe not being the best thing for the players,
right,
and maybe not being the best thing for the league overall.
Right, and that's fine. But my point is, the players would have to ratify this, right? I mean, there's some sort of vote, right? It's not just Gene Upshaw decides it's done.
But, you know how...
I mean, there's got, there's a...
Matt
there's,
Burke has to vote.
But I was going to say, isn't there like a 60-person advisory board of players,
sure
senior board advisors? Yeah.
But whatever the head is going to... Whatever the head
they
wants,
they're
that's
not going to sit there and read every word.
Right, yeah. But my point is they are relatively agreeing, whether you think it's good for them or not.
But
they're
that's
agreeing.
What I'm saying. You're
they're
asking,
not the bad guy that's
but you're
holding
asking
this up.
Me what he's supposed to be doing, and I'm saying he's supposed to be getting what's best for the players. And I'm not necessarily sure he is. I don't think.
But I think that's a different argument.
They've explained to me a million times how non-guaranteeing their contracts is best for the players, and I still haven't heard a good rational explanation as to
and
why.
That's a totally separate argument. They've agreed through the guy that they have hired to represent them in these negotiations, they've agreed to a deal with the league, their employer. Whether you believe that deal is good or not for them is separate from they're not the one that's holding up this deal that, if you believe some people, is going to ruin the league forever if they don't get it done.
I would agree with that. I would agree that they
are.
So
I think it's important
aren't,
for the,
I don't.
The representative
not,
to get
you know,
that out there.
Yeah, but, you know,
I don't.
Upshaw could say, okay, 57% and it would be done because how that's being paid for through the owners is acceptable. But he knows that it's the own, you know, the owners themselves have a little civil war going
right.
on. So why not hold out? Because you're right. It's not the players that are holding
right.
this up.
Because they're benefiting because their 60% is coming from a larger pool in
right.
total revenues, not
but
what
no
was
one's
that, DGR.
Saying the players are holding it up.
Well,
it's not like the players are
but
coming
people
under criticism.
Will. If Upshaw sits there and doesn't say a word, the
oh,
perception is that the negotiation is between the players and
that.
The owners.
When the news gets out that Upshaw has left the negotiations, a lot of fans say, well, why? Why is he leaving? Sit down until it's done. But that might be part of the conspiracy is what I'm saying.
I just don't necessarily see him as being a very strong figurehead.
Well, I don't think
but
so.
That's fine, but that's separate
that
from this specific
to get up,
negotiation.
To get up all in a huff like he did last week, I think, was totally orchestrated. I think it was like
I agree.
It was
I
like
agree,
Jim
too.
Rome. I think it was everything. It might as well have been Bill Belichick pulling the strings of Tom Brady. It was Tagliabue pulling the strings of Gene Upshaw, just telling him everything you wanted to
see,
say.
See, that's the only part I don't know about.
And that's I mean, that's
I don't know why it doesn't
about.
Benefit his players for the people to know that his players aren't holding this up. The owner's infighting is holding this up.
I don't think anybody ever, I have not heard one person even intimate months ago, weeks ago, days ago, hours ago,
oh, I have.
That the players are holding this up.
Plenty of casual fans believe that this is a negotiation between the owners and the players and that they're far apart. When they aren't necessarily.
There's been a lot written about how the owners themselves are the ones.
But those are informed writers. I'm just saying if you ask Joe Fan at the gym, he's like, are these players and owners ever going to come to a deal?
Maybe.
Well, you know what?
Based on that, then why bother coming out and saying it? It's not working then, if that's what you're saying.
What do you mean? Because you're trying to get
that out
there.
I'm sure he's saying that, and
you're trying
still not
to get
buying
that out
so,
there.
So, I mean, what good is it?
Well, he said that relatively recently. All this has been going on for a year and a half
heard,
now. I've heard.
I
oh, they're close to an agreement. Well, yes.
I mean,
I haven't
heard the amount of people that you have talking about the players being.
I have.
Involved.
I think if you
matter of fact, I think there are more
the
people that
fan.
Talk like Tom did in his Ask PFW a couple of weeks ago, talking about how the NFL players have it the worst of all the pro sports.
Well, first of all, I think anyone who calls talk radio or Ask PFW sends an email is like 1% of the fan base.
I'm talking about Tom.
No, I know, but I'm saying anybody involved
right.
with that sort of thing is a relatively low number in the fan base. I think there's a lot of just fans out there that don't necessarily call WEEI, don't necessarily email SPFW.
No, I agree.
And just say,
that's a small
are these
minority.
Players and owners going to get it done? Why are they going to ruin my favorite league? Are they going to ruin my Sundays? And,
yeah, well,
and Upshaw wants to say, you know what?
I think
players aren't
a big
ruining
part
it.
Of that.
Oh, see, I don't, because if the players are... In agreement with him that this is an okay deal.
That's fine. We don't have to agree on it. I'm just thinking that Upshaw is a big part of the reason why people think like that.
I just don't understand what he could be
doing. I think Upshaw just bends over and takes whatever Tagliabue gives him.
What, but that's a different argument.
There's one thing about...
I think this is the same argument. Right now, he's doing exactly what Tagliabue wants him to do. That's
but
my
you're
argument.
Arguing that he bends over and takes whatever Tagliabue gives him.
That I'm right
but
about
still,
that.
His players are still
theory.
Getting blamed for holding up this agreement.
See, that's where I disagree with you. I haven't not seen... If I could even give you one example, I would say, I've heard that. I have not heard one person.
Oh, I have.
Not one person.
This isn't anything like the NHL when they
Nothing.
Have problems.
Nothing. You couldn't find anybody to defend the players.
That's
not
right.
one person.
That's right.
I haven't heard that.
That's right.
I haven't heard that anywhere. I'm not
just
saying you're wrong.
To like
I'm just saying
Joe
I haven't heard
I'm talking about.
I talk to a lot of Joe fans.
Guy who you know is a construction worker who just doesn't really follow it, but Sundays sits down with his beer
Why
at 1
are you
p.m.
Hanging out with construction
well,
workers.
Let's
all of a sudden, Mr. Common Man, Andy Hart.
I'm not an elitist.
He used to work construction.
No,
you
know.
I'm a football elitist now too.
A lot of our emailers are the more educated fans, and
right.
Maybe they've talked to other people. Maybe they have
fancy themselves
maybe they have an opinion on this. Let's hear. Let's go back to some emails, though, all right? Shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're running the ship here. Let's direct it.
We have more coming. And
I think we should go to 4 hours every Wednesday.
Bite your tongue. Scott from Washington, D.C., I would like to hear your thoughts on one particular player in the upcoming draft. Even on the handful of websites that I trust, I have seen him ranked as a second-round prospect by some and as a guy who will be gone within the first 15 picks of the first round by others. The player is North Carolina State defensive end Manny Lawson.
First round.
I know he had a blazing fast time at the combine, which seems to have elevated his stock, but he seems like a player so well-suited to become an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense that only teams like the Patriots and the relatively few others who run a 3-4 would take him. Anyway, what are your thoughts on him?
Well, I'm
pretty good player.
I'm doing my mock draft, and I just couldn't find a spot for him. So I put him 28th to Jacksonville, who runs a 4-3, and I said they can use him as the edge pass rusher that they need. But he is more suitable as a 3-4 linebacker. I know the Dolphins and the Cowboys
right.
have both interviewed him extensively and are looking at him.
But I would also – I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I would disagree, and I know Andy agrees with me too because we were talking about it yesterday. I think there's more and more of the league now – at least uses 3-4 principles part-time basis.
Right.
So to say that there's only a select few amount of teams.
Oh, no, his value's rising.
And plus, that's wrong.
You're on the cusp.
4-3 in college, I mean.
Right.
But you're on the cusp.
3-4, at least in passing situations sometimes.
Right. But you're on the cusp of straight 4-3 becoming the least represented segment. You have 3-4, which is just growing.
These things always run in
cycles. The Tampa 2, where you have to be able to run a 4-5 at every position on the field, are becoming the predominant defenses because of the Tampa tree with all the Marinellis and
Andy
all these guys.
Andy is very familiar with Andy Lawson because as he knows, I have predicted that, what was it, about a month ago when you were doing your rankings, I said Manny Lawson will go in the first round.
I also have my doubts about some of these guys. Lawson, who did he play with? Mario Williams.
Right.
We see Elvis Dumervil, and then I see Montavious Stanley, and it's that question I have trouble with all the time. Who made who? And it was a question Montavious Stanley was asked all the time. Because you were taking double teams, did Elvis Dumervil have 20 sacks, or is he that good and he made you look better and that's why you're sitting at this combine today?
But here's the thing, though. Defensive
Stroud. My guy Stroud, who I said, is he ever good or did he play next to Seymour and John Henderson?
Defensive ends that were productive in college and that are 260, 265 and run 4.440s, they don't usually slip to the second round.
Well, if you can rush the passer.
Right.
And who said that at the combine? You can rush the passer.
Well, Belichick said a couple years ago at the draft, it's the guys that can score the touchdowns and the guys that can rush the passer.
But the point was
highly coveted guys in the
draft. The guy said, if you have the basic measurables, not necessarily have to run the 4-4 or weigh this or weigh that, but if you're in the kind of the general range there and you could rush the passer in college, you're going to be able to rush the passer in the NFL.
I agree.
Because it's just one of those things that works.
Okay, Mike Wright's in.
And I think Manny Lawson, by the way, you know,
Mike
Wright
is in.
I don't know a lot about him other than what I've been reading lately. I think there's spots for him throughout the league. Even if you're not, even if you're a team that doesn't necessarily play a base 3-4 like Dallas and New England does now in Miami, there are teams that will, you know, he'll be a nickel pass rusher at the very minimum immediately.
And a lot of these guys I thought was interesting because 3-4-4-3 was a huge question to every defensive lineman and linebacker. A lot of these guys
could sneak it in.
Right. A lot of these guys have said, you know, most colleges run a 4-3. You know, there's a very few college programs that are a strict kind of 3-4. But it seems like a lot of colleges, if I can trust all these players,
are at least in part mixing in 3-4 and principles and
as pro teams are
being multiple like the Patriots and all these pro teams have done.
You know,
so they're getting a little experience.
It's very cyclical. I remember back in the late 70s when I first started watching the Patriots.
He's old.
And we heard Belichick talk about this with you on your coaching tree story.
Yes.
You know, how they had the...
Great story.
No, remember when they had the Patriots defense and Parcells and Belichick did it in the Giants?
And they took the playbook.
They just took the Patriots playbook from Chuck Fairbanks and they scribbled out New England Patriots.
Wrote New York Giants.
That was the 3-4 that Fairbanks brought from Oklahoma. Well, that at that time...
Yeah, as we know, it goes back to that famous coach.
Bud Wilkinson.
Bud Wilkinson, who won 46 straight games by cheating.
Every team, almost, in that era ran a 3-4. You know, that was that everybody was running the 3-4. And then all of a sudden, it goes back to the 4-3, and then everybody's running the 4-3.
And it's going
to
do the same thing.
Here we go again now. It seems to be going back toward the 3-4. It's cyclical.
People will say,
runs.
You're a 4-3 defensive end. Do you feel more valuable here or less valuable because only three teams play a straight 4-3 now, and you might not be... And then in a few years, it'll come around, and whoever wins, they'll try to copy them. Defenses, whatever works, come around.
You run the wing T now, you know.
So basically, you can play for Delaware, and that's about it.
Let's see. Mike is a Midwest Cats fan. He says, I was wondering if you guys had any information on how Tim Dobbins from Iowa State, inside linebacker.
Check KFFL. His combine numbers are up there.
He has the size and smarts to be a perfect fit at inside linebacker for the Patriots and could be in the fourth round probably.
Where did he go to go? Where did,
Iowa State. Just get some inside information on the guy. So we'll have
I'll let you handle this one.
I don't know much about Tim Dobbins. I really don't. I
could have handled that part.
We haven't
never heard of him.
Well, we haven't done all our film. I mean, with
next week we're supposed to get the film from Brian Wade.
I mean, I don't know every player in the country. I
called you Mel Kiper Casale yesterday.
I sure as hell don't.
Well,
Mike Mayock. I talked to Mike Mayock, and he's supposed to be a genius, and he screwed up like three things in the conversation.
Will you guys
I talked
let me
to
stay
him.
Home on Saturdays like I used to? Because if you did, then I'll know who Lou Dobbins is.
Tim
Dobbs. He does money talk on CNN.
Right. But one name I want to throw out there for you, Fred, is Dwayne Slay, the safety from Texas Tech, been compared to Rodney Harrison, and he actually said he thinks that comparison is true because he waits for people to come over the middle so they know that there's someone waiting for him.
Didn't he give the number that he knocked out or something?
No, that was Jimmy Williams from Virginia Tech.
Knocked out six guys.
Slay
I felt good about that.
He's a second-round safety that I don't know if he'll be there when the Patriots pick, but if he is, he's a guy that would fit in well here.
You also got to get your other name out there. Your boy that you're in love with.
Max Jean Gillis?
No. Everybody's in love with him. Hank?
Oh, Hank Basquette, the receiver from New Mexico. You're looking for the steal of the draft?
Fell in love with him after
Hank
talking
Basquette.
To him. Pulled an Andy.
Yeah, but then I did some research on him. The guy had 77 receptions for over 1,000 yards and like 14 touchdowns for a team that runs the ball all the time. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Plus, the guy says he's the best blocking receiver in the draft, right?
Yeah. Oh, he said by far. Best blocking.
Now, if I can get anybody else to confirm that, it might be valuable.
He said, why do the defensive backs get to have all the fun? He said, I love to put those guys on their back.
Just so you know, I'm the smartest guy in this room.
But he was very... No, but he was. He was a very intelligent guy.
Now it's really common.
And Andy, who wasn't there, by the way, when I talked to him, because he was... Hank Basquette talked when Vince Young was speaking, so I was the only one next to him.
I had my butt, head up his butt.
But he was a very intelligent guy.
We haven't even talked about the Wonderland.
Who was confident, but he wasn't being cocky. You know what I mean? He was just very, and he said, you know,
facts, I'm the best blocker.
He said, I think that's what set you apart. He says, I think I'm the best blocking wide receiver in this draft.
And
he's a tall guy. He's 6'4". He could be an asset in the red zone. So you're looking at a third, fourth round guy who, if the Patriots are looking at a receiver, he could be a nice fit here.
Okay.
And as we know, that's where they get all their offensive weapons. They'll get a running back in the mid rounds, a quarter, wide receiver. So you know, as you believe, that's really where you get your best talent is in the middle rounds of the draft.
Absolutely. All right. This Wunderlich thing we didn't talk. You mentioned Vince Young. I'm not.
Who would want stud players?
Vince Young was reported that he scored a 6 on his initial test, and then there was a story that came out that it was incorrectly graded.
There's been more stories about that test.
And then he's going to be given a second chance, and a lot of people think it might be just the combine people covering up. But
then he retook it and got a 16.
So you mean Gil Brandt?
Well, no. So one story is it was the same test regraded properly this time, and it became a 16.
Well,
there's a lot of stories out there. All I need to know is watch the frickin' tape. The guy's good.
He's good. Well, how was he in his interview?
He was pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know. I was talking to Hank Basquiat.
He was falling in love with some mid-round draft pick.
I'm glad Andy was spending time, you know, interviewing guys that really have a legitimate chance to be Patriots.
I was actually doing my work while he was sitting there gawking at Vince Young.
Okay.
He was impressive. He did a good. He talked about his throwing motion. He said every coach that's seen him said, "Don't change a thing. You'll be fine.
That is the one.
Don't change anything." He talked about Tennessee. Obviously, there's a lot of talk there because that's kind of the slot people have him looking at. And McNair, and he, I thought was a funny quote. People said, you know, will it be strange going to Tennessee? You're so close with Steve, who he said he had spoken with the night before. So he clearly is just talking to him every practically day through this process. He said, will it be funny kind of putting him out to pasture, so to speak? And he said, well, you know, Steve's had his years. And then he goes, well, you know, he probably still has a couple more left in him, but. And I thought it was a funny way to answer it. But, yeah, that was the interesting thing. And the other question with him is, he has, is it Major? Major something is his agent? No. His agent is a family friend kind of new age agent.
Well, I heard he's they're going to get another agent as well, but he's kind of their
right. It's kind
advisor.
Of a weird deal. Yeah, yeah. And he said he's not worried about it at all. He has told his agent that you'll be fine. I trust you. We'll get through this process. It's going to help you. I want to help you get established. You're going to help me. We're going to help each other. The whole freaking show me the money thing.
That's what Ricky Williams said when he hired Master P.
Right. Now Master P's dancing on TV, Ricky Williams is now, in India.
Gary did some research and actually got a sample Wunderlich test that he gave me. And if this is any indication of the questions they're pretty easy.
That's it. We all took it.
Well, but I got the highest score.
This is easier than the one we took.
No, the one we took is really easy at the beginning. That's probably a sample, right?
Yeah, it's got 9 questions.
Yeah. It gets hard when you get into the 30s, the 40s. They get harder.
Yeah.
It starts out. I mean, unless you're an idiot, you get double digits.
You should definitely get double digits. I think you should never get less than a 20. Don't you want to read some of the questions?
It's hard to.
Don't you want to read some of the questions?
It's hard to.
Did I say that funny?
Kind of. You have water in your mouth.
Do over, like, for example, the first question is, look at the row of numbers below. What number comes next? And then it has 8, 4, 2, 1, 1 half, 1 quarter. And then you've got to have the answer. And it's a multiple choice. 4, 1 half, 1 eighth, 1 quarter, or 1 are your choices.
1 eighth.
Obviously, it's 1 eighth.
Okay.
And Vince just said A and just went with that. And then the next one, he said B. If you
know.
Got a 6, you didn't try.
Right.
Or you can't read, as Paul says.
Assume the first 2 statements are true.
Which would be a kick in the stone.
Which I don't want to dismiss, by the way.
Right.
Assume the first 2 statements are true. The boy plays football. All football players wear helmets. The boy wears a helmet. Is the final statement true, false, or not certain?
This is bringing back
true?
Philosophy flashbacks, logic. Oh,
yeah,
God,
the boy plays football. All football players wear helmet. Yeah. The boy wears a helmet.
True.
It'd be true.
When he plays football.
Don't read any more of those questions. They're making me sick.
Okay. Or when he bangs his head against the wall, I don't know.
The bottom line is you should take that logic
10.
In college.
The 9th month of the year is
September.
You know, so it's not hard stuff. It's not hard stuff.
Like Andy said,
I don't
care.
Probably if you just circled, that's easy.
I actually feel better if he didn't try, because if he can't read, now you're saying, am I going to have problems dealing with him on a day-to-day basis?
Here's what kills me, though, is the excuse that came out right after. One of them was, he was completely he was unprepared for it. How can you not?
That's
know
stupid.
That you're going to be given the Wunderlich test.
I can give the first 10 questions to a 5th grader and they're prepared for it.
Yeah. But Andy, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'd feel better about his intelligence level if to find out that he didn't.
How would you feel about
that he didn't
person.
Try?
Right.
But how would you feel about drafting the guy and investing that amount of money if he thought so little of it that he didn't try?
I just it's the interview process, but I do the thing Bill does. I differentiate between street smarts and every. And
well, that's
football.
Why I think
if he goes in there and he goes, well, see here, we had rolled over coverage to the Twins on the right side with this and that, and I go. Okay, I'll draft you. You're good.
Right. Now, if he could do that, but yet he looked at this and said, reserve, resent. Do these words have similar meanings, contradictory meanings, mean neither the same nor the opposite? And he said, what does resent mean? But yet he could go.
You know what I say? But yet, I'm getting this guy cheaper than I thought because he ain't bright.
but yet he could go and say, well, they were rolling the coverage to this, and they had Tampa 2 here, and they had the Twins on that side. So I went to my secondary read and got the hot receipt. That would be enough for me. I don't care that he doesn't know what
I'm
doing.
That's what I mean.
But if I found out that he didn't even look at the test.
I don't care about that either.
Then he's got to really convince me off the field that he knows what he's doing.
Here's the one thing, though. In college, you can get away with just having athletic ability.
Right.
In the NFL, if you
play
quarterback,
that's my one fear with him.
You have to have some intelligence.
But
if he is that stupid, he won't succeed in the NFL. And I don't care about any stupid wonder. I'm just saying, he just can't run every single time in the NFL. You got to be able to read defenses, know what's going on, know playbooks.
And he claims he did that.
Okay.
He claims his freshman year, he thought he was the greatest athlete in the world, came in and didn't have a lot of success because he was just trying to get by with what God gave him. And he made the adjustment. He said his first year in the NFL, he hopes will be different because he already knows, I couldn't get by in college just on my athleticism. I sure as heck am not going to get by just in the on athleticism in the pros.
Drafting him will give him a good, you know.
If he makes me look bad,
certainly
I
based on what I've seen, I would not bet against him succeeding.
No.
But
I think there are
some things that you need to concern.
But
you know,
again, if
a
he,
six
if
is
he,
a six.
If he
I mean,
ends up
bad.
On a team like Robert Gallery, he won't succeed. Because that's part of it, too.
Oh, there's no question. Where you end up is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Which is a problem he could face. But Tennessee, if he ends up there.
That's a good situation.
I think that's a pretty good foundation.
Great for him. Yeah. Absolutely.
On a lot of levels. I mean, I don't want him ending up with some, no offense, you know, Scott Linehan, he's an offensive guy, but maybe he just can't control a team. Or, you know, I feel better in a proven environment like Tennessee.
I agree. That would be a perfect spot.
Henry is from San Antonio, Texas. The CBA is terrible. I saw a few. Okay, that's all he wanted to say about that. Then he says I saw a few possible players who could be free agents in the next day or two. Players such as Brett Favre, Jimmy Smith, Will Shields, Warren Sapp, Warwick Dunn. I even saw Rodney Harrison's name on that list. Do you think he could be released in a couple of days? Also, do you think that the Patriots go after some of these big time players? I know there would be football for the next 2 years, but after 2008, will there be any football at all?
Are you allowed to release a guy who's injured? Under contract and injured?
An injury settlement.
Well, yeah.
There's an injury settlement. You're not technically allowed to release him because of his injury.
Right.
But you can make the case no matter what.
He's old.
Because of the salary constraints we had to
release. And that goes back to our good buddy Jerry Jones, who released Jimmy Smith when they told him he was going to die. Jimmy Smith was on his deathbed because he had some liver disease, and then Jones cut him, and it was a big deal. And a big mistake.
Yeah.
Good move.
But from what I've seen, teams will do that injury settlement. They'll release an injured guy. The injured guy will claim, well, they released me because I was injured. The team says no. It goes to an arbitrator, and the teams are willing to do that and then pay the settlement.
Right. Warwick Dunn won't be released. Brett Favre won't be released. Rodney Harrison won't be released.
Well, I know Harrison. I don't know about the other two at all. But, I mean, why would Harrison
would
be released?
Warwick Dunn?
Well, just
that was on the front of ESPN.com when we came down. I don't know.
You have to get under the cap. There's a cap situation. He's not going to be released because...
But the Patriots are very close,
no,
is my understanding.
Okay.
And Willie McGinnis is the first guy with a ridiculous cap number that goes.
The cap number is going to go up anyway.
Right. I mean, people know what they're playing with, basically.
Right.
92 to 95,
Harrison's
whatever that is.
Not playing with anybody else.
And he makes no money.
95 as of now, right? Yeah, Harrison doesn't make any.
So I don't understand why his name is lumped in there. I don't know. I mean, Brett Favre obviously makes a lot of money. Warwick Dunn obviously makes a lot of money.
Willie McGinnis could be on
that's
that
what
list.
Well, he's going to be cut either.
Favre is just
any
retire.
System they're under, he's going to get cut.
I was going to say, the only system... I was going to say the only system is an uncapped one, but even in an uncapped situation, they're not going to pay him.
Got a big number, not that good.
They're not going to pay him what he's...
Send in the emails about his 4.5 sacks and all-time leader and .88 sacks per playoff game.
Fred, he'll be back.
Exactly, and that's why he'll be back, because he's a smart man.
Exactly.
He'll be back, but he's...
always been willing to
but
renegotiate.
But he's getting
released. Bill Belichick uses him better than anyone else will, and he's a smart guy.
Romeo Crennel offers him more money, Fred.
Paul, I think...
He'd rather win here, I
think. You were on the Big Show Monday, and they were talking about Hall of Famers.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody was saying that
Willie McGinnis,
and
I started laughing.
There's no way.
Someone said that to me once, and I said, you mean the Patriots Hall of Fame, right? Because,
I'm not even willing to put him in that.
Come on, Paul.
Offer him a double with the Patriots.
There's no way they will. Not at his age. No way.
What if Parcells wants some leadership?
Parcells knows about Willie McGinnis.
Maybe he likes him.
See, I don't think Parcells really needs him all
the time. I was going to say, he's got the youngins.
Yeah.
maybe you Romeo, know, but I think he'd stay here.
That personnel. I think he's looking to bring in like a veteran leader for that team. I don't know if McGinnis is that.
Yeah, Matt
I'm just throwing it out there because Fred said there's no way. But I'm saying with Belichick disciples all around the league now, you know, what if Romeo Crennel, who they said
Genie.
Has a lot of money to spend.
Oh, they have all that cap room money.
They're not going to sign him for more than probably what the Patriots would be willing to pay.
All right.
I don't think.
But I love Bill Belichick.
Jay writes in, although I really wanted to discuss the combine, this CBA discussion is fascinating.
Ooh,
I agree with Andy that an accountant or team of accountants should be able to come up with an equitable solution. I think one item that should be included is the debt service the team is responsible for. Why should the Crafts be penalized for being brilliant businessmen and putting their own money up for stadium when other teams are content to just sit back and rake in the profits? I love how the Pats are now considered a big market team. The reason they make money is because they take risks and work hard to be successful and innovative. Here's a question. Go back to when the Crafts bought the team. At that time, how many owners in the NFL would have switched franchises?
Zero.
The answer is none, because most people thought the only way to make money with the Pats was to move the team, and that was not possible with the stadium deal that was in place. Excellent email, Jay.
I have a question.
What?
I have a question here. What? How do the other things? I mean, we read the story in the Globe a couple weeks ago about, you know, the Kraft's potential plans here at the stadium. Is that NFL revenue in any way? If he builds a mall a mile down
so
the
you're
street,
you're gonna have to share that with Bill Bidwell and Dan Rooney too.
No, he should.
Or Jerry Jones has got all these billion-dollar aspirations down there somewhere. Yeah, I mean, if a guy buys a ticket to a roller coaster, is that going into the NFL revenues?
Right,
that's all that's going to end up happening is they're going to start branching out, and all your money is going to be under a different corporation name. And it's
right. The mall is going to be responsible for selling ads at the stadium, so it goes through the mall. And
mall might be onto something. This might be the reason why these guys are starting to do this, like Jones with the amusement park next to the new.
Well,
stadium,
Minnesota's new proposal for a stadium includes the same type of entertainment complex.
And like the one with the Jets didn't go
through. And when they buy the luxury suites for the Vikings games, they're going to be tied into the mall.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Jets had
you get a free pass to the mall.
Yeah. If the Jets get the Olympics and then there's money going through the Olympics, how does that get in?
We wouldn't have those luxury suites for the new stadium without the Olympics coming.
It was just for the Olympics.
Smart men will always find a way to make money no matter what you try to do.
That's right.
But I wonder how much consideration those types of things. Are they so far advanced that players say, well, you're building that. We want that included. Or are they smart and they wait till this gets signed and then they slip it through?
Am I not allowed to have any other business besides?
Well, that's what I mean. At what point does it end?
I know.
Does paper money start coming? Well, regular money is paper, but the money from the paper company start getting included?
I didn't know what you were talking about either. I'm glad you clarified that.
Phil from
Nobody
Austin.
Pays in quarters anymore.
Phil from Austin writes, and I apologize Phil. For being off topic here, but I'd like to ask a question about football. I've always wondered about big inside linebackers.
Bleep is that supposed to mean?
about big inside linebackers in the 3-4 system. One of the objectives of the two-gap system the Patriots defensive linemen use is to keep the offensive linemen from being able to get to the inside linebackers, allowing them to make the plays. Assuming that the two-gap is successful, why do you need big linebackers? Shouldn't you be able to have smaller, faster inside linebackers in this system if the defensive line is doing its job?
No.
That's not necessarily what the principles of that defense are. The inside linebackers need to take on the guards.
Right,
right.
The guard's not taking on anyone else in most plays.
Ravens
you only have three linemen, remember.
And if that linebacker shoots the A, the running back runs through B for a touchdown.
He
shoots the B. He runs through A for a touchdown.
He explained the Ravens defense.
Everybody in the front seven,
where the defensive linemen are there to hold up linemen and the
right. Now, if you wanna shoot Vince Wilfork through the backside A and shoot a line, you can cover him.
You can stun.
But that's not what they do.
What they do is,
and if one guy does that and not everybody else does, there's a gap that's left uncovered.
Whatever they play, 4-3 or 3-4, their basic principles stay the same, and that's just what Andy just said. Everybody's responsible for two gaps. And, you know, the nose tackle, obviously, and the inside linebackers and the A and the
right,
B
they
and all
overlap.
That stuff.
They each have two gaps, and they overlap. You know, the nose has both A's. That linebacker has the A and the B. So there's two guys kind of in the A, but neither guy is shooting the A.
So you can be free. You can get yourself free and be able to make a play if you happen to pick the right gap. That's not the way the Patriots play. But they play, you take on the guard and are responsible for either side of that guard.
Right. See, the basic,
that's why you can't be 220 pounds.
I think what he's trying, the basic tenet of the 3-4, though, is that you do have playmaking linebackers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But not guys that are running around
and more so the
plays.
Outside guys.
That's
gotta,
like what people complain about Brian Urlacher.
You better be really good.
Right. They can't have the Colts and the Patriots linebackers are the exact opposite. Cato June would not fit in well with this system, but he fits in perfectly with what the Colts run.
I mean, there's some arguments like Brian Urlacher wouldn't fit in here. Maybe the best linebacker. Well, he definitely wouldn't. But Urlacher.
I'm serious.
The question about Urlacher is, can he take on guards?
Lofa Tatupu.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, when they say about linebackers in a 3-4, a lot of times they're talking about the outside guys really being playmakers because they can do a variety of things, rush, cover, do different things. You don't know which guy's coming on any given play.
Right.
The inside guys, to some degree, have to be a little bit more stout.
It's almost like having two of those middle linebackers, like Urlacher was in Chicago. But that was what they did. You know, like Tom just said, you just described Ray Lewis and the Ravens. Their job, like when Baltimore had their great defense in 2000, Sam Adams and Siragusa, that's all they had to do was to keep guys from getting to Ray Lewis.
Right.
That's not the way the Patriots play.
Right.
The Patriots defensive linemen have much more responsibility than just occupying blockers. Now, that's a very common phrase that we all use. That's part of it. You do have to occupy blockers, but you also have to make sure you have your gap responsibility.
Somebody's
got to
make the play.
Right.
To some degree, every player on the Patriots front seven, when the ball is snapped, their first thing they do is try to own the guy across from them. Just stand him up.
It's almost more like a 5-2, where the two inside linebackers are like, you know, deluxe linemen.
Yeah, no,
you're running into that guard. They're running into that guard.
Yeah.
You know, Ted Johnson wasn't looking to get around him. He was running dead center of him and then figuring out where the ball was going, the ball was coming to.
I also think that was part of the problem for the two new guys last year.
No question.
They were running around a lot, trying to get around blockers. And then when they were taking on guys, especially, I thought Brown would get swallowed by those guys.
That's why you feel like you made the right read. The way the guard blocks or something, and you're shooting it. You're Monty Biles. You're shooting that B gap. Well, if the guy isn't there yet, you could still be in the wrong gap. Maybe he was intending, a step ago to go to that B gap. Well, now you're there, and there's an opening in the A gap. He's going to the A gap. Can you react? Oh, you got blocked. Oh, you just gave up a big play.
Right.
Now, if you own that guard, if he goes A, you come off left and you make the tackle. If he goes B, you come off right,
you
make
strong.
The tackle.
Ted Johnson was so great because he would stand up that guard or whoever was trying to block him and own him and be able to go either way.
But that's also why in this 2-gap 3-4 system, you don't see a ton of guys coming free and just lighting up the running back. It's a pile. They make the tackle at the line of scrimmage in a pile because they're all holding up the guys.
Yeah. They eliminate. When their defense is going well, like it was in the last month and a half, and their run defense was amazing, you didn't see any cutback lanes.
Right.
You didn't see anybody going into the line, running into a pile, like
you
see a lot of times.
What you saw in the beginning of the year.
And it's what Bill says. Bobby Hamilton was always a guy, he said, would do his job. You knew where he was going to be. And that might mean not make a tackle for 20 straight plays, but that running back doesn't have anywhere to go because Bobby Hamilton's where he's supposed to be.
All right, Craig from Newcastle, England. Everyone,
I don't know, football for you, Mr. Sarcasm.
And Phil, in 2 years when there's no more NFL, we won't be talking about big inside linebackers.
Craig from Newcastle, England. Everyone is talking about drafting a first-round running back, but don't you think the Corey Dillon can still have a season like he did last year when he was up with the elite running backs in the league?
By last year, you mean whatever he had, 700 yards?
No, 1,600, I think.
No, he can have about 1,000 yards.
I think he'll be 1,000 to 1,100 yards. He can get 10 or 11 touchdowns.
Can
that can be good enough for you to win because they've won with that in the past with Antoine Smith.
But you're almost good enough to win this year.
Somebody else to take some of the pressure off of them.
Yeah, I would like personally. I don't necessarily want to draft a running back in the first round the way Andy and Tom do, but I would like to see a running back get drafted prominently.
I'm
first
just saying, I'm a believer in that you draft talent.
Yeah,
if Lawrence Maroney is talent.
If that's
and
the
if
pick,
he's there, and you pass it off.
I agree with
you
that.
You better draft a damn good player.
And according to Mike Mayock, he believes there are 6 players in this draft that are good running backs that can help you make an impact. And that's the top 4, which are obvious. Then you added Joseph Addai and Brian Calhoun out of Wisconsin. After that, he says third down backs, or maybe you can find a guy for your system, you're a zone blocking team, and he can do this kind of well, or he's a power guy, whatever. But there aren't top level backs after that. There's 6 guys that maybe can fit into that category. Chances are, 3 of those 6 aren't going to be that good. But those are the guys that might be good.
That's a good point.
We're talking about teams like the Bills and how much they could potentially earn. Jim from Roanoke, North Carolina, got a Forbes list that has the Bills ranked 25th in terms of team value and revenue. And that might be true, but Andy's question is not really what they're valued at. It's what their potential.
And I don't want to know what their revenue is, what they're bringing in. Right. I want to know what they could or should be bringing
in. Give me a new stadium with luxury suites and, you know, as much signage sold as you possibly could. Sell the naming rights. Don't name it after your 111-year-old owner. And then tell me what the team
and
is.
And not all
then.
Of that.
If, they're still, if they do all that and they're still ranked 25th,
and not all of that, because I don't want to just assume every year you go 14-2 and everybody's happy and everybody wants to buy. Give me a realistic aspiration for a legitimate NFL franchise that does their homework.
Gabe from Pennsylvania just tuned in. You may have already covered it, but how realistic is it that Vinatieri is gone this year? It really sucks if this is the case. Damn Gene Upshaw and his collective bargaining ass. Go figure, it takes an X-ray.
See, it's Gene Upshaw's fault. Told you.
Right. I was wrong. You're right.
It takes an X-ray.
That's the first guy I heard.
Yep.
That's the first guy I heard. Blame the players.
I'm telling you, there are millions of them out there.
And this, by the way, has nothing to do with the CBA.
Andy is a man of the people.
I am, clearly. He's an elitist.
You know, from what?
I'm a what?
You don't have a car right now, so you're a man of your apartment.
I'm an elitist?
Jonathan Kraft was on the TV a couple nights ago, and I guess Belichick had some words to say about it.
The TV?
You know.
Can I time out for
on the TV tonight?
I'm ripping Gene Upshaw for not getting enough money for the players, and that makes me an elitist?
No, you just haven't heard any of the 90% of fans that think it's Gene Upshaw's fault.
You're not hanging out with
guys. You hang out with
the players have a terrible contract.
They're on the big show.
An elitist.
They're on the big show hanging out with Glenn Ordway
with
and driving off in your
like
Mercedes.
Me.
Right. I gotta go to the Pennsylvania coal mines to find out what the real people think.
You're making my point.
So the TV, what did you see on the TV?
on the television set.
Jonathan Kraft was on the TV
was it
a
color?
Couple nights ago, and I think I heard Belichick say it at the Combine that
Craig,
last
thank
year when
you.
They signed Vinatieri as a franchise player, they tagged him. They promised him that they wouldn't do the same thing this year.
Right.
And part of the reason
I didn't hear Belichick say that.
I definitely didn't hear Belichick say that.
I heard
it's not in my story.
Saw a thing that Kraft said it.
Yeah. I've heard this rumor, but I never heard Belichick say that.
I think
you heard Jonathan say it word for word?
It was in the...
I don't Bill trust what's written.
Just so you know, Bill didn't say that at the Combine because Andy gave me those quotes.
From what I read somewhere, they promised that they wouldn't use the tag again the next year. And so now... not living up to that promise, and they don't have a deal.
Bill said at the Combine it wasn't financially feasible.
Right.
That's what he said.
Yeah, exactly.
What, the franchise tag?
Yeah.
Right. And I
he
agree
said it
with
was
him.
Last
I'm
year.
I'm not paying
not
Adam
year.
A $3 million guaranteed salary.
Every year you got to look at the player, look at the team, and decide if it's financially feasible.
Plus the other problem you look at here. Maybe you think $3 million it's a little more than I want to pay, but you pay it. Well, now Adam Vinatieri sees himself as... $3 million is the baseline. If I sign a long-term deal, we're going up from $3 million. You know what I mean? If you now his last salary was $2.5 million, that he says I'm not taking no pay cut. So you know what I mean? That's you've raised
you
that
look great on the
value
radio the other day because you completely shut up, Bill Burt.
Oh, that was a surprise.
But I was going to say there's Packers a tough thing. One.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the way I put it in the update, Andy. And I don't know if you ended up reading this before you posted yours, but this whole thing with Neil Rackers, they keep talking about him. He's the second highest paid kicker. Which is a little bit deceiving to begin with because Mare and Elam and some guys like that are in the back years of the deals that they signed when they were the highest paid kicker, whereas Rackers was very, very much front loaded.
Right.
But anyway,
because it had to be. He just signed it, right?
He signed last November a 4-year, $6.4 million deal with a $3 million signing bonus.
Okay.
Let's just say $6.4 million over 4 years. Let's just operate under the assumption that he's going to get every penny of it.
Right.
If Adam Vinatieri was franchised in 2006, that would have given him slightly over $5.5 million for 2 years. So in half the time, he was going to earn almost what Rackers will earn.
Right.
That's not financially feasible. I agree with Bill.
Right.
That's not financially feasible to give him that much more than the next highest paid kicker.
And I think it hurts you moving forward because he's always going to have that value in his mind. I made $5 million
even,
the last 2 years, and you're offering me 5
before?
Even
if it stayed the same, which we know it doesn't because it would go up 20%. Right. Even if it stayed the same, you're talking about $11 million over 4 years to 6.4 to the next highest paid kicker?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
But Adam could say, you know what?
If anybody thinks that they should have franchised them, please write 90 words saying why and self-addressed in an envelope.
You might find yourself in the point-counterpoint.
Point-counterpoint this week.
But the other thing is, the Patriots could have avoided this. You know, you look at it where you say, oh, Well, if you had signed him a year ago to a long-term deal, you wouldn't be at the $3 million mark and all this crap coming together.
And that would be a valid
criticism. Plays into his thing of he didn't have an agent. And you if his agent hadn't been decertified, maybe he would have signed.
And you wouldn't be running the risk now of him hitting the open market, whereas it might look like, and I still think that he'll be back and he'll re-sign, but you run the risk now of getting to midnight Thursday and somebody calling him up and say, we'll give you $5 million signing bonus. I don't think that'll happen. I don't think anybody will pay him that kind of money.
Adam. It's coming.
Scary.
Yeah, it's coming from the Lone Star State. That's where it's coming from.
I got an amusement park in the future. I'll pay anything you want.
But if that happens.
Hear about that uncapped year?
It's going to be awfully difficult for Adam to say no. Yeah. If someone really knocks him over with money.
Honest answer, because we've gotten some SPFWs and I've heard people on the radio, the old, you know, it was okay with Malloy, and I understood law.
We keep getting those.
But if Adam goes, I'm really going to have a problem with Bill this time. Right. Is that true, or do they forget in a week and be like you and say, Vinatieri missed a kick in Denver. He's not that good.
As soon as the next kicker wins a game for you, they forget.
Although, if a kicker misses a couple game winners, then we got problems.
Bring in missing Sisson.
I will say this, and look, no one's perfect, okay? But I think that the organization here has done a pretty good job, we can all agree, of procuring talent. In recent years.
Good word.
Just in the last couple of years, we had Owen Parkman in camp, who I don't know if he's still in the NFL, but he kicked around a little bit.
see what you did there.
Unintentional, probably.
Robbie Gould.
And Robbie Gould, Fred's guy. You know,
I'm still amazed by that one.
You know, maybe they just have an eye for this. And maybe
who knew he was aiming for those uprights he hit day after day in training camp?
Who knew that it worked to his advantage to never make one inside of 35 yards?
Unbelievable.
He had a good leg. That's all I knew.
Fred just thought it was great how far past the goalpost that he kicked the ball. Never was inside them, but it went way past it.
It's like Major League. Guy throws it 100 miles an hour. Doesn't matter. Hit the mascot over by the dugout.
Right,
the ball's not out of a lot of
parks. All
right,
that's going to do it for this edition of PFW Progress. Want to thank everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next Wednesday, hopefully, with a CBA.
What's going on?